Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. So, I guess the big question is, how you feeling? The standoff is over. The hostages have all been wounded. And yet the robbers got away scot-free. Yay! As we signed off last night here at the program, the House of Representatives, they surrendered. And I know it's being spun a whole bunch of different ways. But that's about what it was. Congress at about midnight last night approved an $801 billion tax package, handouts to the very, very wealthy, and a $57 billion extension of unemployment benefits for those people who actually need it. The vote was 277 to 148. You had 138 Republicans and 139 Democrats. Interesting numbers. Who voted for it, 112 Democrats and 36 Republicans were against it. So, interesting numbers. Two people from Pennsylvania voted against it, Kathy DelKemper and Paul Kanjorski. Both will no longer be in the House of Representatives at the end of the year. So what did we get? What did we get? What did we give up? Well, again, you know, you go back to this, and we talked about it last night. What you and I are going to get is not much, not a whole lot, a couple of bucks a week. And you look at this 1 year, 2% slicing and, you know, basically chopping off of Social Security. They claim it's going to give the average household about $934, but here's my problem with that. That's money not going into the Social Security fund. That's money that the Republicans know, and the people who want to destroy Social Security know that if they can weaken that, they can take that out of there, it's going to make an already bad situation much worse. Look, you know, to me, we should be doing everything we can to strengthen Social Security. If you want to give out a couple of tax points, do it with a deduction. Do it with another child credit. Increase the individual rate. Do something like that. Don't take it from Social Security. They also renewed 38 expiring tax breaks for interests down in Louisiana due to Hurricane Katrina, energy companies, stuff like that. Also, we're going to be borrowing this money, so you got to know that. And what they're claiming the spin here is that this is a stimulus. It's a stimulus. We're going to give the very wealthy all this money, and we're giving a lot of money up to the very top. Understand that. You and I are going to see very little. In fact, under certain circumstances, people who work for a living, they're going to actually pay a little bit more. Kind of reminiscent of 1986 all over again. And the big prize for Republicans, you know, the cherry on the top of their win was the estate tax. It will now be 35% on that dollar above $5 million. So big win there. The Democrats wanted a 45% tax on everything above $3.5 million, and they lost that vote big, 233 to 194. Democrats were hoping, you know, and I've been talking about this for the longest time, we need to be raising the top marginal rates instead of lowering them. It's going to stay at 33 and 35%. I have advocated for going back at least to the Clinton years, which were 36 and 39.6%, and, you know, really back to the Reagan years, where it was 50%. And I think that would help. I mean, understand, we are in tough economic times. Things are tough. But the powers to be, the folks, and there are a number of Democrats that did as well, weren't willing to take the stand. And for me, I got to be honest, and I've had this conversation a bunch today, at some point, you know, this whole bipartisanship is overblown. This compromise stuff to me is overblown. We should have fought this a little bit harder and demanded a little bit more. And maybe Ted Strickland's right. Maybe the Democrats should fold up the tents and let somebody else play the game. Because they could not win this, what I think was a very simple sell. And the simple sell was, look, folks at the top are doing very well. Things are tough for everybody else. Wall Street's doing great. Profits are up. Bonuses are up. Everything's great. They're tip-tap dancing all over the place. The Wall Street Christmas parties this year are second to none. You and I, people who work for a living, not so good. And I said, you know, if we would have taken the money that we were giving away to the top 1%, top 2%, and handed it out and said, okay, we're going to borrow this $800 billion. Let's divvy it up amongst the people who need it, people who've got bills, people who spend money. That's my problem with this whole thing. If it's a stimulus, what's the stimulus?
It's interesting to take. I find it fascinating from a political science standpoint. The far right, who opposed it, is saying, boy, this is a real coup for the president. The left is saying, this is going to come back to bite us. It's an interesting dichotomy. And you know, as far as Social Security, Rick, you absolutely know, without a doubt, in a year when it comes time to go back to the original rate on Social Security deduction, the Republicans are going to fight it. They will fight it, and they will label it a tax increase. And that's a win-win for them because they believe that lower taxes are better. But beyond that, they would like as much reason as they can to go after Social Security and say, see, it's not working. We don't have enough money. And you know that's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. Without a question. And my thought on this is, you know, how do the Democrats keep walking into this? And, you know, I use the word we because I'm not on the other side, but I'm really not on the Democratic side in this either. And there's a lot of that. This is a tough time for folks like me because, you know, you used to think that, you know, this side was there was a little help here. There has been very little help. There has been very little, or at least the appearance of. Now, look, the stimulus bill, that did help the economy. That did bring us back from the brink of disaster. I think it was structured a little wrong. I think it was a little too small. But here again, it's this, you know, we've got to deal with the Republicans. You've got to deal with people who they wanted a much harder down. They wanted a much worse scenario. And if you listen to our new senator, you know, Senator-elect Pat Toomey, he said often, if he were in charge, it would have been a much harder down. Which means, understand the language, which means that you would suffer more. There would have been more job losses. There would have been more people out on the street, more foreclosures, more of the negative things that we saw in the end of 2008 all the way through 2009, and we're still seeing to an extent. Look, nobody said this was going to be easy, and I think this is where the president made a mistake very early. I do think he got rabbit ears. I think the Republicans were smart. They were out there saying, wow, he's blaming Bush for everything. Yeah, it was Bush's fault. Of course you're going to blame Bush for it. He did it! Along with Clinton. You know, the the Economic Modernization Act of 1999 caused this mess. It doesn't get any simpler than that.
You know, that's ironic. Today I heard, and I laughed when I heard it. They said that George Bush is just ecstatic now he can pass on that legacy to Obama, and you can bet that it'll be the Obama tax cuts.
Well, if you remember the years before the collapse and all the time that we were on the air before the collapse happened, I predicted that collapse for March. For the following, I thought Bush would be able to prop the economy up through January, and the collapse would happen after the new president took the White House sometime in March. So things were even worse than I could have imagined, because he couldn't keep it propped up long enough, and they couldn't keep it secret long enough to shoo it off on somebody else, because I really thought it was going to happen on a Democrat's watch.
Well, the truth is, what they've done is basically kick the can down the road, and the possibility exists. I hope it doesn't happen for the sake of the people involved, but the possibility exists that there'll be more suffering by doing it this way. And adding between $800 and $900 billion to the deficit, which will make it that much harder for us to recover.
And where are all the fiscally responsible conservatives? Where are they? Because we've learned, honestly, I think we've learned tax cuts don't create jobs. Money in people's pockets creates jobs. When I've got a couple of bucks in my pocket, I'm going to go consume something. Not the wealthy. They don't consume products like we do. You know, they buy a Cadillac. Okay, they buy an expensive car. Okay, great.
You know, there's one question I'd like to ask them. Now, they must have seen this coming. I mean, both parties had to see 6 months out, Rick, at least, that this election cycle is going to be different. You know, everything's going wrong. The economy's in bad shape. The people are angry. All the polls said it. They must have seen a shakeup coming. And at that point, you would think the light would go on with the Democrats and say, look, this is a key issue. We promised, and they did, mistake. They promised the American people to do something about the tax cuts.
But they tried. I mean, at the end of this, you still have to go back where the blame belongs, to a recalcitrant Republican Party who believes in scorched earth.
But their timing was horrible. Very little leverage now. Why didn't they do that a year ago? Why didn't they do that 6 months ago when they had a lot more leverage? Now, what leverage did they really have at the end of the day?
Nothing.
It was basically, well, we're going to beat them over the head, and we're going to make speeches, and we're going to pound our fists, and we're going to yell and scream. But even that, I don't even think the president used the full power of the bully pulpit, and that's why some Democrats are angry. They feel, and I feel that way too, that he didn't go the extra mile. Where was the passion? Instead of the passion being against his own party, where was the passion? He should have gone on TV, should have railed, he should have gone after some of these people. And I think he could have, and I understand it was a party of no, but I truly believe that you could have cut some of the Republicans off and eventually had them vote.
I think the Republicans are a homogenous lockstep party, and they were hell-bent from day one. The second he took office, they were on message, he's going to fail, this is socialism. Right down the line, they were selling their talking points. Now the question is, and this is the question that I have, where do we go from here? Do Democrats pull the same thing that Republicans did? Say, okay, fine, we're going to go your route. And we're going to not let anything get done. I sure hope not. I hope there's a way we can move forward, but I don't think so. I think the Republicans are going to say it's our way or it's no way. So tonight on the program, we got Amy Dean, author. Talk a little bit about Labor's meeting today with the president, how that went, what kind of stuff we can expect. Because I got to be honest, some of my Labor friends, not happy. Not happy with this president. Also, Edward Amar from the Sheet Metal Workers International Association going to be here talking about some of these CEO pay deals. You know, these big CEO salaries and that kind of stuff. And then when we come back, Roger Hickey, co-founder of the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org is their website. We're going to be talking about what is next. What does this next January look like? Where do we go from here? Where are the attacks? And what do we do about it? Because at the end of this, it's still about us. It's still about you and me taking to the streets. And I'm, you know, like we talked to the folks yesterday from California, people setting up house in the parking lot of J.P. Morgan Chase. That kind of stuff has to happen more often. People have to go to the streets, and maybe they need to start living in the streets. We're going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Office and Professional Employees International Union is offering a unique benefits plan to members and non-members alike that it hopes the national labor movement will adopt. WIN's Doug Cunningham reports from Las Vegas.
OPEIU President Michael Goodwin says his union is offering access to health care, discounted prescriptions, towing services, and other benefits for just $52 a year. The plan is being rolled out here in Las Vegas in an effort to attract 2,000 taxi drivers to the OPEIU. These drivers are already represented by the union, but aren't members in this right-to-work state.
The goal of today is to, number one, say thank you as a loyalty benefit for the 3,000 we have, so we invited all of them. We've also invited the other 2,000 who have not joined yet, and hopefully they'll see the membership benefit program, and they'll mix with their brothers and sisters, and hopefully they will join. So the goal is, of course, is to get all 5,000 in the union.
Goodwin says OPEIU is also offering this benefits package to small businesses and workers that don't have unions. They would become associate members of OPEIU for as little as $1 a week. Goodwin says this OPEIU initiative could be a successful model for the 13 million member AFL-CIO to adopt nationwide.
I want to use that collective power of those 13 million to get these providers to collapse their rates so it's affordable, and then we can extend it and give those benefits to members.
A deal reached with the Obama White House and South Korea is headed for a vote in Congress next session. The agreement has split organized labor with United Auto Workers and United Food and Commercial Workers coming out in support, and labor mothership AFL-CIO coming out in opposition. However, a move being planned by Republicans may unify organized labor against the deal and scuttle support from Democrats who are dependent on labor votes. It has been rumored on the Hill that Republicans will demand that the Korean deal be brought up along with a similar trade deal with Colombia. Organized labor has been strongly against any deal with the South American country due to its poor record of supporting and protecting trade unionists. President Barack Obama himself, as a candidate running for the highest office in the land, condemned then-President George W. Bush's attempt to pass the trade deal with Colombia. According to the State Department, nearly 2,800 trade unionists have been murdered in the country during the last 25 years. While debating the Obama tax deal on the floor of the House Thursday, California Republican Representative David Dreyer may have shown the Republicans' trade deal hand.
With what will be the largest bilateral free trade agreement in the history of the world, that being the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement, I think it's imperative for us to do this in Colombia and Panama as well so that we can create union and non-union jobs, good manufacturing jobs right here.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell.
Well, you know that. I'm hoping, anyway, now that the Republicans got their major heist, now that they got that under their belt, the question is, what next? What are they going to go after next? Is it Social Security next? Medicare? Border guards, cops, and teachers? I mean public sector unions? Are they next? Or will we see another Republican-led government shutdown? I don't know. That's why I've got Roger Hickey here. He says it depends on you and what you're willing to put up with. He's written a great piece. Tell the president, stand up to the hostage takers. Defend Social Security and Medicare. Roger, welcome to the program.
Rick, thanks for having me on.
You know, I'm looking at this, and I've I've been calling this a hostage situation for the longest time, and a lot of people in the working class seem to have Stockholm syndrome, because a lot of people I talk to say, yeah, we should be extending tax cuts to everybody. It seems kind of silly to me.
Yeah, I think most people really resent the hell out of the fact that we are rewarding the richest of the rich, the people who have benefited over the last 20 years, and certainly since the Bush administration. They've gotten all of the increase in wealth and wages, and now we're giving them huge tax windfalls. But the Republicans and the people that work for the wealthy, really know how to use this threat and how to take hostages. And unfortunately, it worked for their attempt to keep the Bush tax cuts where they were. Obama, the president, really needed a stimulus, and he figured that this was the only that there were some things in there that would help the economy. So he went along with their demands.
You know, I gotta be honest with you. What frustrates me is the very people who caused this collapse, who caused this economic mess, are the ones we're rewarding and hoping that they may please possibly bail us out of this mess. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the bailout of the banks. I mean, these guys speculated with our money, created a massive housing crisis and financial crisis, and then they got bailed out, and they're getting bonuses this year.
It's just insane. You know, I'm talking with some of my Democratic friends. I'm talking with some of my Labor friends. And I got to be honest, everybody I now talk to who are my friends, they're furious. There's just no way to spin it. And we lost this hostage crisis. The 99% of us at the bottom, we all got wounded. And the gunmen, they're walking away.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe we lost this fight so badly. I mean, I understand. Look, Republicans are better at the game of politics. But this is ridiculous.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. We can see the next heist coming. We can see that they're going to take prisoners in a big way. The leverage that the Republicans think they have is the having created the increase the deficit with these tax cuts. They are now going to refuse to sign on to the increase of the U.S. debt limit. That has to be ratcheted up every year in legislation to allow the United States to borrow, and they're going to threaten to bankrupt the whole country and not vote for that debt limit increase unless we give them what they want.
And that is?
So that what they want is cuts to the Social Security system. They want to turn Medicare into a voucher, and those are their initial demands. And the big question is whether we're going to take some action to make sure that President Obama doesn't capitulate to the hostage takers again.
But in looking at history, and this is what I'm afraid of, this president, look, no matter what the right wing says, this president has reached across the aisle more than anybody probably in my lifetime.
Yeah, well,
he's been beaten aside every single time.
But Rick, we can see it coming. We elected this president, and I think we can put some pressure on him. I mean, after all, Social Security is still the most popular government program that there is. Medicare is right up there too.
Agreed.
The American public, who have lost their own savings over the last couple of decades, really depend on Medicare and Social Security, and we have the ability. We certainly have to try to show President Obama that he could win this showdown with the Republicans if he simply had the guts that Bill Clinton did when he was dealing with Newt Gingrich. I mean, people remember Bill Clinton sort of trimming his sails after he lost his congressional election, but in fact, he stood up to Gingrich and he said, I'm going to defend Medicare and Medicaid, education and the environment, and if you cut those things, I'm going to refuse to knuckle under when you threaten to shut down the government. It turned out that that Gingrich wasn't willing to pull that trigger, and he apologized, and there was he backed down.
Well, let me ask you this, Roger. You know, in looking at Newt Gingrich, and as far off as I thought he was, I look at the people who are coming into power now, and I think that they're further off the path than Gingrich ever was.
Yes, and they are crazy enough to be willing to sink the U.S. faith and credit in the U.S. Economy. That's an advantage when you're a hostage taker, is to convince the rest of the authorities that you're nuts and you're willing to shoot your hostages.
Well, I think they're the past 30 years of this scorched earth policy, our way or the highway. We're gonna you do what we want, or we're gonna blow everything up. I think they've got a history, they got a track record of being off the path.
Well, this is shaping up for a showdown in March or April, when this legislation has to be passed. If it's not passed, then the U.S. government cannot borrow money, our credit rating around the world will plummet. This is going to be a really good test of Barack Obama's friendship with Treasury Secretary Geithner and all the other bankers who he just saved. The Wall Street guys are going to get very, very alarmed when they realize that the Republicans are threatening to crash the economy. And President Obama, backed up by the rank and file Democrats, can just say no, and he can tell the Wall Street guys to discipline their Republican allies. It's something that we've got to fight for, because, you know, if we lose on Social Security and Medicare, we might as well give up on the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and everything else. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Roger Hickey. He's co-founder of the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. You know, what gets me is you bring up this fact that they're against raising the debt ceiling. We've heard a lot of the Tea Partiers say that, and we've heard a lot of Republicans saying, we're going to fight this and we're going to stop it. If that's the case, if they're so concerned about debt, if they're so concerned about the debt ceiling, why did we just give $800 billion away in really poorly constructed tax handouts?
Yeah. I mean, you could ask the same question about the original Bush tax cuts. Why did we fight two wars simultaneously? Without paying for them, the Republicans have been incredibly irresponsible when it comes to the budget, and now they are using the budget deficit that they created to demand that we cut essential government programs. So again, they just have to the president and the people have to stand up to them.
I agree, but here's the question, and the thing that I keep asking people over and over. President Obama is the guy that I supported, that other folks that I know supported. He's the Democratic president. How do we get him to do what we want him to do? Because obviously the pressure so far hasn't pushed him in that direction. In fact, some of the responses that I've seen back from him have been anger towards the left. You know, phone calls, letters, what do we do?
Well, we've got to do all of those things. We've got votes that he needs in just 2 years. We've got the labor unions whose army of door knockers and volunteers he needs in the next 2 years. And we've got the ability to take this issue to the country. And, you know, it's not just liberals who support Social Security. It's the Tea Party guys. The rank and file of the Tea Party movement, half of them are on Medicare and Social Security. And
they don't know Medicare is a government-run health insurance.
I think we've got to talk to those people. I think we've got to really reach out to those people and say, is this what you signed up for, kicking your grandmother off of Social Security? We've got to build a movement. And we've also got to say to the president, the vast majority of the voting public doesn't want you to capitulate this time. We want you to draw the line. And I think we can do it. I've been involved in a coalition that stopped both Bill Clinton and George Bush from privatizing Social Security. We did that by showing up everywhere those presidents went and telling them that the public doesn't want them to do that. I think we've got about 200 members of Congress who have signed a pledge not to cut Social Security and Medicare. So we've already built the basics of a movement around this thing. We've just got to activate it now and use the political pressure, all the political pressure that we can bring to bear, and make the president do what he was elected to do. He's got a lot. There's a lot of videotape of President Obama as a candidate pledging that he will not harm Social Security and Medicare. It's up to us to build the political muscle that can make sure that when he gets up at the State of the Union message, he says, like Bill Clinton did, I'm going to save Social Security. I'm going to strengthen it. I'm not going to be the first Democratic president to cut those programs. So it's, you know, there was quite a firestorm about this tax cut deal. He felt that he had no choice. We've got to show him this time around that he does have a choice.
Well, I think, you know, here's what bothers me about this whole deal here. I think that, again, Republicans have this scorched earth mentality, and Democrats, there's this caring about others thing. I do believe that the Republicans would have let the unemployed wither on the vine and die. I do believe that. And I think that's where the president saw, and this is where I have to give him a little slack. He saw the Republicans willing to let that happen. And I do buy into it. I do believe that he didn't want that to happen. Personally, what I think should happen is all of those unemployed people should be marching on Washington with their blankets and their cardboard boxes and block the streets and do what they have to do to be seen. Because what's going on in this country for too long is we've shunned the unemployed. We've locked them away. My producer calls them the AIDS victims of this era. We've got to do something to get them out into the public and make a point with it.
I agree about the unemployed, people who don't have jobs. We've got to help them be a whole lot more visible. But this, you can say the same thing about people who either are on Social Security or, like me, hope it's there when I need it. That's the majority of the country. And that whole army can march on Washington. That's an even larger group of people,
right,
who can join with the unemployed to say, don't you dare. The other thing that we can do is we can say to Wall Street, don't let your boys crash this economy. We're not going to bail you out this time.
Yep, not again.
And we've got to get them to put pressure on their Republican stooges.
You know, because here's the thing. I look at this messaging, and I hate to harp on this, but yesterday we talked to a woman who got arrested for protesting foreclosures in California. You know, you're seeing people who we've had people on this show who are now homeless because they can't find a job and their unemployment ran out, or their house was foreclosed upon. There are all these folks that are suffering, and at this time we choose to give a lion's share of this tax break to people who don't need it and are not. I'm sorry, they're not going to create jobs in this country. They're going to create jobs in China or India or Malaysia or somewhere else, or South Korea when we pass that. That mess. That's what bothers me.
It bothers me, too. Listen, I think we have to take back the Democratic Party, and we have to say to President Obama, if you want to get reelected, you had better run on a big, bold investment program for jobs. We've got about a year from now to sell Obama on how he's going to run for re-election.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think he's got about 6 months. Because if people don't see things in 6 months, because I'm hearing folks talking about we got to start running a primary candidate. And who are we looking for?
Yeah. Well, I've heard people say that, but President Obama, for his own re-election purposes, he knows, he's got to know that the economy is not going to get much better in the next 2 years. It's just not. The Republicans are really not interested in making that happen. So every president who's run for re-election has either gotten an economic recovery going before that successful re-election, or like Harry Truman, they run for re-election blaming the Republican Congress for not doing what they need to do. And that's Obama's only hope.
Well, that's what I've said he should be doing right now. And on January 3rd, if I don't see the employment numbers coming up, I'm going to be pointing at the Republicans. Where are the jobs that you promised us? Because during the election, they promised if there were no tax increases on business, job creation would go up. If there were no new regulations, jobs would be raining from the sky, like honey come from the sky.
Yep.
If on January 3rd we don't see some improvement, I'm going to be saying, where are the jobs? Where are the jobs that they promised? They ran on that, and it's not happening.
And there's one more thing that we've got to do. We've got to convince Obama and the Democrats to introduce their own jobs plan.
Yep.
And it's not going to pass because the Republicans control the House. But we can blame them then for the failure of the economy to recover. It really is up to us to convince Obama to govern like a Democrat.
Yep, and I'm right there with you. Roger Hickey, co-founder of the Campaign for America's Future, OurFuture.org, his piece, Tell the President, Stand Up to the Hostage Takers, Defend Social Security and Medicare. There's an action that they want you to take. Write a letter off to the White House over there. We put a link at our site at therickssmithshow.com. You can click on Roger Hickey's name. It'll take you right there. You can ship that right off. So that you can be part of the action. Roger, I appreciate your time. You guys do great work at the Campaign for America's Future, and I appreciate that.
Rick, thanks for having me, and happy holidays to your audience.
All right. Happy holidays to you, sir. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Question. What do biotech corporations, national milk processors, and the Ohio state government have in common? Answer. Defeat. Such biotech powerhouses as Monsanto and Eli Lilly are the profiteers behind an artificial growth hormone that induces dairy cows to produce more milk. This stuff is not good for the cows, and it produces nutritionally inferior milk. It also horrifies consumers, who tend to get a bit testy at the thought of having what actually is a sex hormone added to the milk their children drink. However, big milk marketers like the idea of squeezing out more milk per cow, for it fattens their bottom lines. The only problem is that little matter of consumer rejection. But the biotechers and marketers fixed that by getting federal regulators to declare that adulterated milk need not be labeled as such. In short, the industry, the government, and even the cows know about the sex hormones, but consumers are kept in the dark. Nonetheless, many organic and smaller dairy businesses have had the audacity to label their products as hormone-free, and consumers have rushed to them. This spurred the hormone hucksters into a cross-country lobbying frenzy, demanding that various state governments ban hormone-free labels. Ohio swallowed this corporate line, outlawing labels that tell consumers what's not in their milk. Now, however, in a case brought by the Organic Trade Association, the U.S. Court of Appeals has ruled that such bans are not only ridiculous but unconstitutional, violating the free speech rights of dairy producers who want to be straight with consumers. This is Jim Hightower saying, this court decision is a major defeat for the 15-year effort by the corporate powers to hide their perfidy from milk buyers. To learn more, contact the Organic Trade Association at OTA.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
This ends the investor class. Diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead set up schools, build prisons, and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had that conversation just today, talking about the effort that's going to happen here in the state of Pennsylvania, where they're going to try and privatize the wine and spirit shops. That's been the right-wing wet dream for quite some time. And the stories that I'm hearing is you're getting some church groups that are kind of with them. Why? Because of school vouchers. That to me is just the one of the most devious parts of this whole thing, which is why, again, institutional religion, one of those things that bothers me. Let's go to the phones. I got Wayne on line one. How are we doing tonight, Wayne?
Good, buddy. How are you doing?
I am fantastic.
My name's Wayne Rebich.
A buddy of Bob Kincaid's.
A very good buddy of Bob Kincaid's. A very good
talks
buddy.
Very highly of you, Wayne.
Okay. I was listening to your guest.
Okay.
And stuff. And I agree. I agree. But my thing is, you know, I know the history. I know how we got here. I know, and there's a lot of people I blame for that. And what are we going to do now? You know, that's what counts. What are we going to do now? How are we going to move forward? And one of the things, originally I was a Hillary Clinton fan, not because I'm from West Virginia, but because I think she would have made a hell of a president. And when Obama, you know, when it was evident that he was going to win the nomination, then I was behind him.
Right.
And I've met him. Bob and I met him years ago at a, Jefferson Jackson dinner in Charleston, West Virginia. We want to lay all this stuff on the president, man. And my problem with all this is nobody has the president's back. You're a union guy.
Yep.
You know, how strong are you by yourself, or how strong are you with eight guys standing behind you?
Well, look, here's the thing. I think these last 2 years, labor has been wholeheartedly behind him.
No. I realize that. All I'm talking about is our fellow, how many other Democrats were we fully behind who have run away from the president? We just experienced this last campaign. How many Democratic representatives or senators ran on their record, ran on the accomplishments of the Bush administration? How many of them were out there explaining how health care is a good thing?
Not an awful lot. There were a few.
Not an awful lot. They didn't have the president's back. You know, we have to... I'm originally from Aliquippa, Pennsylvania.
Home of Bill George.
Yes, sir. I went to school with his brother, Bobby. I know Bobby was sick. Did he pass on?
Unfortunately, yes.
Sorry to hear that. But, you know the story of Aliquippa. You know what it was and what it has become. And, you know, that's because of all this corporate stuff. My main point is, you know, if we don't have the president's back, we can't expect him to do.
I'm of the mindset, Wayne, it's not so much of having his back, it's pushing him in the right direction, guiding him. And I think for too long, what happened right after the election, what happened is you had all these people who were energized, all these people who were involved, and right after the election, everything stopped. We stopped pushing
him. And those very people became his biggest critic. Those very people became his biggest critics. And that's us, man. That's, you know.
So what should we do?
I'm a liberal, you know. I don't buy the progressive shit. Uh-oh. I'm on terrestrial, right?
Yes.
Okay, I got to remember
that.
No,
it just got dumped.
Okay, but good. Thank you.
Let's not do that again.
I apologize for that, right. You know.
So what should we do?
I'm sorry. We have to take responsibility for this. Union people, locals, internationals, we have to do this. We've got to a point where we're so protective of, okay, you're in the Teamsters. Have you ever heard of the ACT Foundation, Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation?
Yes.
Okay, I'm a representative of them. In West Virginia, we did this absolutely, I didn't do it, I don't know. It started 20 years ago, I've been there 14.
Right.
But have this truly unique idea that if all of the trade unions, which there's 14 different trade unions, work together in a common cause to advance our agenda, that we could do better. And they convince people to do this. And they donate, well, now it's like for every union construction worker in West Virginia, when they're working, they donate 15 cents an hour to the ACT Foundation. The ACT Foundation hires people like me and, you know, there's other staff and stuff, and we lobby. We're active.
Right,
we do things.
Right.
We work as one. Yeah. Now, do the carpenters and painters have their arguments and
sure.
want to beat each other up?
Yeah,
yes, they do. You know,
families.
Electricians, blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole nine yards. Right. Operators, engineers, and the Teamsters, you know. Everybody has their problems. But come for this organization, everybody comes together and moves for a common cause.
So that's I agree with that point. We do need to rally together and find something. I do. Wayne, I got to take a break right here. I appreciate the call, though, buddy.
All right, man.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
As the workers who serve you in Pennsylvania's wine and spirit stores, we send warmest holiday greetings to all of our customers.
We make sure that you get the best products and service, and we make sure that underage drinkers don't buy alcohol in our stores. We're proud of our record. It can't be beat anywhere.
And we don't have troublesome liquor stores downgrading every corner in our communities.
We look forward to serving you this holiday period and in the years to come, and continuing to generate more than $500 million a year for the Pennsylvania Treasury. That keeps our state taxes down.
That's right. More than $500 million a year. That benefits all of us as taxpayers, and it's growing every year.
So, from all of us in the wine and spirit shops,
please enjoy our products responsibly and have a safe and joyous holiday.
Brought to you by the members of the United Food and Commercial Workers throughout the state who serve all Pennsylvania.
The blue blood, see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Somebody's watching you, you like it. Somebody's watching you, you care.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, tomorrow at noon, we will be in the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle, kicking off our Hungry and Homeless for the Holiday events. Hope everyone can stop out and donate a can or two. Maybe we can get some of our private equity and hedge fund manager friends to come out. After all, they're not hurting. In fact, the top 25 hedge fund managers last year averaged over $1 billion each in take home. And they, you know what they paid in tax? 15%. Because we don't tax capital gains the way we tax a guy going swinging a hammer or a guy sweeping the streets or busting his behind doing a whole bunch of other things. And yeah, it's a pretty neat trick if you think about it. They get to save about $200 million on their billion. Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Amazing stuff to me. Let's go to the phones. I got Mike on line one. How are we doing today, Mike?
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I was listening to the previous discussion there. I got news for everybody. If you feel like you want to go write some Congress critter a letter, my suggestion is you get a shovel and some sandbags and fill sandbags till you get over it, because the sandbags are going to do you a whole hell of a lot more good in the long run. That said, one of the projects I want to try to get some help on here is I want to try to get the various labor unions to publish a list of all the living legislators in Pennsylvania, how long they served, how much they get in pension, and how much they started making and how much they ended making. Because they seem to think that working people are getting too big a pension. Oh, in the legislature, dear heart, about 3 terms or 6 years gets you a full boatload. And I've been on the job now for a little over 24, and I don't get anything near a full boatload.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I had wondered about Alan Simpson. You know, as Alan Simpson was talking about all those federal workers and all those people on Social Security and all of that, I wondered how much he has taken in pension from his time in the United States Senate and how much Social Security he gets.
Yeah. We need to push these lists, name and data, and they need to put them in full-page ads in major newspapers so people can see what the Congress critters are doing to us. The current level of pension for Pennsylvania state workers wasn't changed by state workers. We didn't get together and bargain for that or go out. The legislature wanted to jack up their pension.
What, Mike? Whoa, hold on, Mike. You mean it wasn't those public sector unions that did it?
No. We were in the middle of a contract, and as most people don't know, we don't get to just reopen the contract halfway through and say, hey, look, we decided we'd like to have a lot more money, so we want to do the contract again. No, that don't happen.
But that's what the right wing keeps. I've been hearing that all for the last month. That you strong arm people.
Yeah, I don't know how we do that. But that's what I like to see, just publish the list and see, because every legislator who's getting a pension, I'm thinking, is drawing 6 figures or better.
Well, I would love to see that.
Yeah, I think it's great. And it should be all public. It should all be public record. It's available to it.
We'll have to find a good researcher.
Yeah. But the guy that was talking a few minutes ago, we got to get back behind Obama. Excuse me. We were behind Obama. That's why he's in office. Card check? Do you remember that? That idea that we had when we elected Obama?
Yeah, I've got a lot of clips of him talking highly about it, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's never once come up for a vote in the entire time he's been in office. Excuse me. I've had about as much of his back as I'm interested in. They just cut Social Security payment 2%. What they needed to do was take the cap off.
I agree.
Social Security, so that there's no limit. And the next thing they need to do is they need to tax all forms of income.
That's
because, as you know,
that's exactly what I've been saying. In fact, what I've been saying is you take the cap off of Social Security and you lower the rate so that I get a big tax, so that working people get a big tax cut. And you spread it out over all of the income. So our hedge fund managers who took $1 billion apiece, the top 25 of them, and only paid 15% tax. And mind you, none of that went to Social Security.
Not a nickel.
Not a nickel of that $1 billion. I say you tax all income the same way. I don't care what it is. It's all taxed the same way, and it's all taxing goes to Social Security. Well, and you bring it down to about 3%, 3.5%, and we would be flush with money.
And that's how they get around that, too, is because they define that as not income. That's profit.
That's capital gains.
Just like lawyers who work for law firms, they don't get a big salary because salary, you have to pay Social Security on it.
Yep.
And you're taxed. You know, what they get is the big slice, the big bonus, which is a capital gain and investment options and things like that. They give them a million or two shares of stock, which, oh, by the way, you pay taxes. No taxes on it at all until you sell them.
So you realize the income, right?
Right.
And then that's capital gains 15%.
Right. You got it. But they don't pay anything.
It's a nice scam. I wish I could figure out how to get a part of it. I'm never going to be lucky enough to sit on my yacht collecting dividend checks. I just don't think it's ever going to happen for me.
You know what the saddest part of this is, Ray? The saddest part is that when the country was set up, there was supposed to be no tax on income. And for everybody out there that may not know, there's a difference between income and profit. If you go out and work as a laborer, and you earn a salary, that's income.
Right.
That was never supposed to be taxed. Profit, on the other hand, is that if you work as a laborer and you finally get a few bucks ahead, and let's say you add a room to the house you got and you rent that room out, that rent that you get is profit.
Right.
That's the difference. Yep. We were never supposed to be taxed on our income.
Well, working people got snookered all along. I mean, and we're still getting it. We're still getting the short end of the stick. You look at this tax deal, and you can spin it any way you want. I'm still against it. I still think it was a bad deal. But, you know, they're spinning it. Oh, it's a stimulus. We'll see.
What are we stimulating?
The Chinese economy.
Right, that's right. That's what we're stimulating. And, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that behind closed doors, the Chinese finance minister has told them, and you better keep doing it.
I wouldn't doubt it, Mike. I just wouldn't doubt it. I appreciate the call, though, buddy. Excellent points. And that's something worth looking into. What the former representatives here in the state, what they've gotten in pension and health care, and as you like to point out, the long-term health care especially. That's really the creme de la. And here's the thing. I'm not against them having it, as long as we can all have it, too. You know, I'm not one of those guys who looks to somebody else and says, well, you don't deserve it. I'm one of those guys who goes, you got it. Let's give it to everybody else. How about us? How about the rest of us? That's where I normally stand. Anyway, hungryandhomeless.org is the website. Go there, help out with the local food bank and homeless shelter. You can make tax-deductible donations there at hungryandhomeless.org. Tomorrow at noon, we'll be kicking off our food drive. I hope everyone comes out with a can of corn or something. No lima beans, please. I don't like lima beans, and I don't know of anybody else who does either.
Come on, Greg. A lot of people like lima beans.
I'm sorry. No lima beans.
I hope our buddy Mike can visit us. You guarantee him one of your deluxe meals, right?
There you go. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Amy Dean. Stick around.
Thought-provoking, opinionated, Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Office and Professional Employees International Union is offering a unique benefits plan to members and non-members alike that it hopes the national labor movement will adopt. WIN's Doug Cunningham reports from Las Vegas.
OPEIU President Michael Goodwin says his union is offering access to health care, discounted prescriptions, towing services, and other benefits for just $52 a year. The plan is being rolled out here in Las Vegas in an effort to attract 2,000 taxi drivers to the OPEIU. These drivers are already represented by the union, but aren't members in this right-to-work state.
The goal of today is to, number one, say thank you as a loyalty benefit for the 3,000 we have, so we invited all of them. We've also invited the other 2,000 who have not joined yet, and hopefully they'll see the membership benefit program, and they'll mix with their brothers and sisters, and hopefully they will join. So the goal is, of course, is to get all 5,000 in the union.
Goodwin says OPEIU is also offering this benefits package to small businesses and workers that don't have unions. They would become associate members of OPEIU for as little as $1 a week. Goodwin says this OPEIU initiative could be a successful model for the 13 million member AFL-CIO to adopt nationwide.
I want to use that collective power of those 13 million to get these providers to collapse their rates so it's affordable, and then we can extend it and give those benefits to members.
A deal reached with the Obama White House and South Korea is headed for a vote in Congress next session. The agreement has split organized labor, with United Auto Workers and United Food and Commercial Workers coming out in support, and labor mothership, the AFL-CIO, coming out in opposition. However, a move being planned by Republicans may unify organized labor against the deal and scuttle support from Democrats who are dependent on labor votes. It has been rumored on the Hill that Republicans will demand that the Korean deal be brought up along with a similar trade deal with Colombia. Organized labor has been strongly against any deal with the South American country due to its poor record of supporting and protecting trade unionists. President Barack Obama himself, as a candidate running for the highest office in the land, condemned then-President George W. Bush's attempt to pass the trade deal with Colombia. According to the State Department, nearly 2,800 trade unionists have been murdered in the country during the last 25 years. While debating the Obama tax deal on the floor of the House Thursday, California Republican Representative David Dreyer may have shown the Republicans' trade deal hand.
With what would be the largest bilateral free trade agreement in the history of the world, that being the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement, I think it's imperative for us to do this in Colombia and Panama as well, so that we can create union and non-union jobs, good manufacturing jobs right here.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, that was the theme this evening. The president met with a number of labor leaders there at the White House, and I would have loved to have been in the room, because during the election the president was all about labor, but I guess starting when he took office we haven't heard much. As I said right from the beginning, the first thing I would have done was to pass the Employee Free Choice Act, because if you want to stimulate the economy, get people the right to organize, get a couple of extra bucks in their pockets. So when we had this last third quarter, the most profitable quarter in the history of this nation, the working people could have shared in that prosperity, but that hasn't happened. So I'm a lot of labor folks I'm talking to not thrilled right now, and this is a tense time. That's why I've asked Amy Dean to come on the program. She's the author of A New Deal. Amy, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's my pleasure to be here.
I'm looking at this meeting, and I got to wonder, what do you think went on?
Well, it's clear from the invite list that the president was trying to woo certain parts of the labor movement, and clearly focusing on the manufacturing workers and then some of the growing larger unions, public sector unions that may not feel the same set of interests on this whole trade agreement. But clearly he was trying to make amends. He did the same thing with CEOs earlier in the week, where he reached out to the business community. The thing you have to ask yourself, though, in terms of the president, is that he reached out to both the business community and the labor community, both equally frustrated and not happy with this president, which puts him in a very vulnerable position. Usually one side or the other is happier than the other, but in this case, he doesn't seem to be doing well with either side of the aisle.
Yeah, he's walking down that center of the road, and both people are throwing shots at him, but the reality is he should be taken aside at some point. During the election, he did run on a very pro-labor and really, honestly and truthfully, the most pro-labor platform of any president in my lifetime.
people were excited when Barack Obama ran for office, and clearly this was a president that spoke the language of justice on the campaign trail, a rhetoric that we've not heard for decades. And I think the expectations were increased given the kinds of things that he talked about. I mean, often we have presidents that say, I'm generically for the labor movement, but he was very explicit. He made very explicit commitments about trying to rebuild the role of working people and their institutions in this economy, and he has been very forthcoming in wanting the labor movement to be part of his electoral coalition, but when it comes to governing, when it comes to making public policy, and it comes to expanding labor's role in the economy, this president has been nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I heard a guy give a speech recently where he said that that labor is like his mistress, desperate to want to be seen in public with him, but never going to happen.
You know, I don't want to just pick on this president because I think the issue is a larger problem within the Democratic Party. Labor is the last firewall between the Democratic Party. We are always the ground troops. We consistently outspend any other constituency group within the Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
There is no Democratic Party absent the labor movement in terms of infrastructure. And elected officials are perfectly willing to call upon us to do the heavy lifting when it comes time to do the heavy thinking and to be part of the governing and public policy making of an administration. This Congress and this president have no use for the labor movement.
Well, here's the thing, and the reason I'm focusing on this is I want my labor friends, I want working people to be angry about what's going on and contacting the president, contacting their representatives, and pushing to get them back on track. I mean, I'm all in favor of going back and doing the things that he ran on. That's the reason I voted for him. That's the reason most of my labor friends voted for him. That's the reason most working people voted for him.
You know, Rick, I think that if the labor movement is going to reverse its fortunes in this country, it's going to need to start sitting it out races.
I said that right this year. They shouldn't have given anybody. As soon as Menendez said after the Lincoln loss in Arkansas, when he said, "Oh, the labor movement will be there," you know, financially, that would have been the end for me.
The only thing that will make the Blanche Lincoln contest a loss for labor will be if it's an exception. If it begins to represent a growing trend within the labor movement to challenge within Democratic parties, to flesh out Democrats with a small d that really are not champions for the labor movement, then it was all to the good. And in order for the labor movement to begin to elect people who are not friends but and will just go along, but real champions, people that are willing to carry legislation to expand labor's role in the economy, people who are willing to say, yes, we need fair trade agreements, yes, we need to expand and integrate ourselves into the world economy, but not at the expense of certain values and political objectives and that we have as a nation. Until we're willing to challenge within these primaries, we will not get Democrats, a majority of Democrats that will be strong on two of the most fundamental issues, the ability to bargain collectively with employers and our ability to negotiate trade agreements that are with countries that treat people fairly. And we're not going to get that if we continue to spend money on just any old Democrat.
Well, as I've been saying, you know, we should be spending money promoting ourselves, promoting labor, promoting the good that has happened. I talk about my story quite often. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. Through my membership in the Teamsters Union and the work that I did and the reward that I got back from that work, I now live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers. It's the American dream.
That's a great story, and not enough people get to hear that.
And I think we need to be promoting more things like that because there are millions of stories like mine.
I agree, and we need to tell those stories. And I think that our elected officials on some level know that and they understand that, but they're not willing to be bold on our behalf. And in spite of today's meeting at the White House, in spite of the fact that we don't hear much coming from national labor leaders, you know, it's my hope that at the grassroots, the labor movement, at the local level, at the state level, people will begin to sit out races when we don't get firm commitments from Democrats that are going to do the right thing. And those Democrats that make commitments and don't uphold them once they go to Congress, we need to not turn around and support them again, and we need to run people in primaries and have a battle in the primary for who is the real true friend of the labor movement.
Yeah, I agree. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Amy Dean. She's the author of A New Deal. Her website, amydean.com. You can get there from our site at thericksmithshow.com. I'm thinking about, and look, I want this president to succeed. I want him to do well. I want him to win a second term. But what do you think has to happen in the coming months to kind of turn his presidency around and to get the people who are disillusioned, the people who are frustrated and angry, some of the folks that I've been talking to, how do we get them back on board, and do you think it's possible?
Well, I think it's incumbent upon labor's leadership to seek commitments now up front before there's going to be a commitment to this president. We were loyal to this president. We supported him with ground troops. We supported him with resources. We were a huge part of his electoral coalition and his victory in 2008. And the time to seek commitments is not 2 years from now, but before he runs. And he's certainly getting ready to run for office. This is why he had labor leaders and business leaders in his office this week. He's trying to shore up his support on both sides of the aisle. But I think that, I think the conversation we ought to be having is, if you don't want a primary challenger in this election, then we need commitments up front now. Not even a question of whether we will support you or not. But I think that this move to have a primary challenger a challenger in the primary is not something that should be taken off the table. Still, there's real commitments from this president. And it's not a question. It's not personal. It's right. Not personal. Working people are fighting for their lives in this country. And we need elected officials who are going to be bold on our behalf, or we need to not be there for them.
It is survival. Let me ask you, what signs would you see in moving in that direction? What signs would there have to be for you to show that he's moving in that direction?
Well, I mean, I think there has to be a clear commitment that there's going to be put on the table his priority, a commitment to expand the role of unions in the economy, and whether it comes back as the Employee Free Choice Act or some other version that makes it once again legal to bargain in this country and win union representation in this country, unfettered, uninterfered by employers. Until there's a commitment to do that, until there's a commitment to expand collective bargaining to the legions of workers who aren't even eligible today, part-time, temporary, and contract employees, until there's a firm commitment even an initial move to bring that about, then I think we should sit it out. I'm sorry, I know that's not a popular thing to say, but someone's got to say it.
Yeah, keep your powder dry. You're going to need it because really, honestly, like here in Pennsylvania, the war is going to be on here. The war against especially teachers and public workers, the war is going to start this January.
Look, the president said I'm putting a freeze on every public employee across this country. Now, the implication with that is I have just opened up the door to giving every governor and every mayor in this country an excuse to try to solve their financial woes on the backs of working people. That's pretty significant. Nobody's talking about that. And that's right up there with the trade agreement with South Korea. It's right up there with this compromise on tax policy and extending the Bush tax cuts. And it's right up there, if not more severe, by saying we're going to freeze public employees' wages for the next 2 years. There will be no increases. And the implication is now let's open up the door for every governor and mayor to come after public employees.
Yeah,
there's not a lot of signs here that we have a friend in the White House.
Oh, and this is why I asked you to come on. And it may sound like I'm beating him up, but I think people have to start to hold him accountable. You know, I've heard this. Oh well, you know, we got to get behind him. We've been behind him. The problem hasn't been in front of us.
Look, I think it's not even just about this president. This is the second Democratic administration in the last couple of decades where we've experienced more disappointment than we've had victory. Now, we all know that when a president comes in that there are executive-level changes that they can make. They can repopulate the National Labor Relations Board. They can put a good person in the Labor Department. They can make executive decisions to roll back what was initially done under Republican administrations. But, you know, for the labor movement to say that's enough just simply isn't.
Yeah,
it's not enough anymore. We're fighting for our lives. Working people are fighting for their lives. And if the only representative of those interests is being held, held back and not being allowed to be part of governing in America, then we can't afford to give our resources, both financial and people, to folks who aren't going to be our champions.
Yeah, and I think you saw that in this last election. I thought I did think that a lot of the people who are normally volunteers and normally out there fighting the fight, they may have pulled back a little.
Well, I think, you know, it puts labor leaders in a hard position. Here the first 18 months of the administration, we had one disappointment after another. We talked to our members each time along the way. We encouraged our members to communicate to the president, to their members of Congress. And then a couple months after that, we turn back to our members and we say, look, we've got to get these people elected. I don't think that's a strategy that we can employ much longer. Can't beat up on these folks, get nothing, and then turn around and try to energize our folks on the basis of the other side is so bad. It is not a winning strategy to engage people in political action on the basis of what we oppose as opposed to what we're for. And if we're just trying to frighten people about how bad the right is and that's the basis for getting out and supporting people, that's not a political agenda. That's not a winning strategy.
I'm right there with you. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Mike on line one. Mike, you got a question for Amy Dean?
Yeah, I do, Rick. I think that we're past the point where we can depend on the political system to deliver us our survival. And I think we're very close to the point where we're going to have to start doing what the French did, which means we're going to have national labor actions, strikes, shut down transportation, trucking, aviation, whatever it takes, shut the country down until we're heard.
Good question, Mike. Do you think that's possible, Amy?
Well, I think, you know, he draws a picture that I think we're closer to today than ever before. Now, unfortunately, there's not the same history in this country of militants as there is in France. But there have been moments of history in this country where things have been so grim. The economy has bottomed out. There was no support from elected leaders. And in order to put our agenda on the table, it required militants and it required being in the street. And it may be that we're approaching that moment again.
No, I said, like I talked about last night, I'm looking for the next Jacob Coxie, somebody to start marching on Washington, setting up camp on the White House lawn if you have to. That's what I'm looking for. So what do you think's going to happen? I got about a minute and a half left here. What do you think's going to happen in the coming months? Do you think this meeting today with labor leaders is going to move him in a right direction, or are we, I think, going to walk the same path?
You know, I think today's meeting was much more an opportunity for the president to reach out to tell the labor movement that you matter to me, you're important to me, and you're a partner to me. And we'll see whether or not the labor movement that finds that significant or not, and whether they feel that's enough or not. I'm not, you know, I can't say, but I just know that I'm certain there were no commitments made on anything other than an extension of the olive branch to say, I, President Barack Obama, recognize the importance of the American labor movement, and I need you to be my partner.
Yeah, but still, I think the right gesture would be to get the Employee Free Choice Act out there for a vote, and, you know, maybe before Christmas. Because I keep hearing Richard Trumka saying, you know, it's coming, but I haven't seen it.
And hopefully from his mouth to God's ears.
Yep. Amy Dean, the website amydean.com.
Amy B. Dean with a middle initial B, isn't boy. You won't get there.
Well, there's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com.
Thank you, Rick.
Just click on Amy's name. Amy, I appreciate the time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Again, the author of A New Deal, a good book. I recommend it. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Question. What do biotech corporations, national milk processors, and the Ohio state government have in common? Answer. Defeat. Such biotech powerhouses as Monsanto and Eli Lilly are the profiteers behind an artificial growth hormone that induces dairy cows to produce more milk. This stuff is not good for the cows, and it produces nutritionally inferior milk. It also horrifies consumers, who tend to get a bit testy at the thought of having what actually is a sex hormone added to the milk their children drink. However, big milk marketers like the idea of squeezing out more milk per cow, for it fattens their bottom lines. The only problem is that little matter of consumer rejection. But the biotechers and marketers fixed that by getting federal regulators to declare that adulterated milk need not be labeled as such. In short, the industry, the government, and even the cows know about the sex hormones, but consumers are kept in the dark. Nonetheless, many organic and smaller dairy businesses have had the audacity to label their products as hormone-free, and consumers have rushed to them. This spurred the hormone hucksters into a cross-country lobbying frenzy, demanding that various state governments ban hormone-free labels. Ohio swallowed this corporate line, outlawing labels that tell consumers what's not in their milk. Now, however, in a case brought by the Organic Trade Association, the U.S. Court of Appeals has ruled that such bans are not only ridiculous but unconstitutional, violating the free speech rights of dairy producers who want to be straight with consumers. This is Jim Hightower saying this court decision is a major defeat for the 15-year effort by the corporate powers to hide their perfidy from milk buyers. To learn more, contact the Organic Trade Association at OTA.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, that's what the insurance industry's been doing. According to our friends at TooMuchOnline.org, working Americans have seen their health insurance premium bills shoot up 40%. Over the past 6 years, according to a Commonwealth Fund study. Those premiums, they report, now cover the cost of less. In fact, considerably less, since deductibles have soared even faster, 63% since 2003. But America's CEOs have not noticed. They're still receiving, according to the USA Today, supplemental health care coverage far beyond what's offered to rank-and-file employees. One example, the Polaris Industries ExecuCare program funnels five senior company executives as much as $50,000 a year in yearly supplemental health payments. The rationale? Well, Polaris spokesperson Marlies Knutson says, staying healthy is part of our culture. Didn't you know that? It's part of our culture. Our CEO culture. We got to keep them healthy, but hey, screw you. Amazing stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Bob on one. How are we doing today, Bob?
Hey, Rick.
Uh-oh, you sound down, man.
No, I'm not down at all. I just want to sort of address for, you know, just this is an unsolicited interview. This business of President Not Sure meeting with labor leaders, that story.
Yep.
Do you remember back in the earliest days of his administration, do you remember what the first highfalutin dinner outside the White House Barack Obama went to? Do you remember that?
No, tell me.
It was right after he was inaugurated, and he went to a sit-down, multi-course, hummingbird tongue canapé dinner at George Will's
house. Oh, I do remember that. Yep.
And he sat down with William the Blood Crystal and George Will and every miserable right-wing the pundit within imagination. And they all sat down and had a lovely, and there was a soup course, and everybody knew which fork to use with the shrimp. And he came back, and then, when he was done, he invited some liberal bloggers over to the White House, and they had cookies, and they had Kool-Aid in styrofoam cups, and some beans.
What's wrong with cookies?
I love cookies. It's the styrofoam I object to.
I am right there with you on the styrofoam.
Well, I mean, but you remember how that all shook out, right?
Tell us.
Well, I mean, that's how that all shook out.
First, we meet with
the right-wing ideologues, and then we offer the street sweepings to the liberals.
I got to be honest with you, though. I would have rather had cookies. I'm not a big shrimp fan. But I get your point.
I've seen you eat. Let's overwork the metaphor.
All righty.
Well, this is the same thing. So yesterday, he sits down with a bunch of CEOs. Today, he sits down with some labor people. You know, I don't listen to Beatles albums backwards or anything, Rick. But there's something to be learned from this. The right wing always comes first with Barack Obama.
That's where the money's at. That's where the media power is. I mean, look at how well, honestly and truthfully, look at how well they knocked him off course. Early on, he tried. I do believe he tried. He was out there. He was saying the right things early on. And then I do think he got rabbit ears. He was out there giving primetime speeches saying, you know, this is hard work. Bush tanked the economy, and the Republicans, they gave him a little bit.
Well, they declared him an angry black man. I remember when that happened.
Yep. And he got rabbit ears, and he stopped. And he
ran from it. He didn't just get rabbit ears. He ran from it.
Yep. And that's when I said, that's when I believe everything went awry. That was his blinking moment. He blinked, and they knew they had him. And look, I don't want to beat this guy up because he's honestly and truthfully the best shot we've got for the next 2 years. And he better grow a set and quick, and the Democrats had better get a spine and quick, and they better learn how to play the game of politics and quick, because the Republicans are eating their lunch. And along with their lunch, they're eating my lunch and your lunch and every working person in this country's lunch. In fact, they're not even going to leave us the bag. That's what's driving me nuts here. We just handed out $800 billion, the vast majority of it going to the very people who caused this freaking mess, and we're supposed to think, oh, this is great. Oh, it's a stimulus. Oh, how wonderful. Who's it going to stimulate?
But you know what? That's not going to work out so well for people on January 1st who wake up, who either individually make less than $20,000 a year.
Right.
Or as a family make less than $40,000 a year.
How Reagan-ish.
We're going to see their taxes go up.
Reminds me of the tax reform bill of 86. Where the top marginal rate came down and the bottom one went up. Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff, Brett. Amazing stuff, Bob.
I know it is. I know it is. And just one last thing, Rick. What you saw today with the meeting with labor is the same thing the right wing does when it meets with the anti-abortion people. Because the right wing never does anything for the anti-abortion people, but keeps telling them it will, so that they'll keep coming out to vote.
God
bless them, the Democratic Party finally figured out that they can do the same thing with labor.
And that's where like Amy was saying, at some point we've got to start looking at sitting some things out. And that's where I agree with her.
I agree with her too, Rick. That's why I called.
I appreciate the call, Bob. Thank you so much.
You take care. Have a great night, Rick.
All righty. You know, and look, honestly, at some point, I want this guy to succeed. We've been saying that from the beginning. We want him to succeed. We've been trying to push him in the right direction. We've been trying to help him along. Saying, come on, over here. Here's the path. Come on. The path to a better economy is better jobs. The path is collective bargaining rights, so people have the right to bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions. That's the way to go. Simple stuff, I think.
Well, what's scary is you look at the polls, Rick. Actually, his approval rating went up. They're already, you know, you talk about running somebody against him. They already threw out some polls. Bernie against the president, Bernie gets about 9%. Hillary only gets, I don't think Hillary would run, but theoretically, in a race right now, Hillary gets about 28%. Right now, he's not in trouble with anybody. I don't know that that's necessarily good. I think he has to feel, sometimes, you know, it seems that he has to feel threatened until he really gets his A game on.
Well, he better get that A game on, and he better get it on real soon.
And that fits his personality. From day one, you said he's a compromiser. And the irony is they call him a radical leftist. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, look, you know, as we've seen, it doesn't matter who it is. You could have Attila the Hun rise as a Democrat, and he would be the most liberal person on the face of the planet. You know, you could resurrect Mussolini, and he would be the most leftist candidate in the history of the world. That's just how they are. It's just how they are. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Edward Armoire from the Sheet Metal International Association. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
As the workers who serve you in Pennsylvania's wine and spirit stores, we send warmest holiday greetings to all of our customers.
We make sure that you get the best products and service, and we make sure that underage drinkers don't buy alcohol in our store. We're proud of our record. It can't be beat anywhere.
And we don't have troublesome liquor stores downgrading every corner in our communities.
We look forward to serving you this holiday period and in the years to come, and continuing to generate more than $500 million a year for the Pennsylvania Treasury. That keeps our state taxes down.
That's right. More than $500 million a year. That benefits all of us as taxpayers, and is growing every year.
So, from all of us in the wine and spirit shops,
please enjoy our products responsibly and have a safe and joyous holiday.
Brought to you by the members of the United Food and Commercial Workers throughout the state who serve all Pennsylvania.
An old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well? Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike. Call him at 243-3211. You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too. So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings. That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. With pride, always
by your side.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Show 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, this tax deal, you know, we're handing out a whole bunch of money in the hopes that, oh, maybe possibly the recipients of this massive windfall will somehow look down upon us poor working people and say, you know what, I'm going to bestow employment upon you. You know, we're hoping that these big tax cuts, the Bush years, we were told that time and time again, these handouts were going to create jobs. And we gave out billions in incentives to create jobs. And my question is, where are they? Where are they? Paul over at Daily Kos writes, hundreds of labor and community activists showed up in Troy, Michigan at a luncheon for the Detroit Economic Council to demand Pulte Homes CEO Richard Dugas describe what his company has done with almost $900 million in tax refunds from the federal government. The event, it was postponed. Why? Because Mr. CEO ran and hid, because he didn't want to say what he had done with it. Because I'm telling you, he didn't do what he was supposed to do with it. And to help us walk through some of this, I've got Ed Armour on the phone. He's a sheet metal worker out in Phoenix, Arizona. He has worked on this campaign. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You know, I'm looking at this, and this is just one story of, I'm sure, thousands. But walk us through this. What's going on here?
Well, it's an interesting deal. In 2009, they passed the Worker Homeownership and Business Assistance Act. That was supposed to, as you mentioned, create jobs and extend benefits to the unemployed. But Pulte Group, and Pulte includes a lot of companies. It includes Del Webb. It includes Centex and a number of other home builders, and they're like the 800-pound gorilla of home builders nowadays. They are supposed to be driving the economy, and they are just driving fancy cars, as far as I can tell. What they did was something really interesting. They got credits. They got a special exemption to write their tax breaks off, not just the year, for their losses. Normally, if you have losses in a year, you could write your tax losses off in a particular year. They've got a special compensation package going in this Worker Home Ownership and Business Assistance Act, where they were allowed to average that out over 5 years of income. And that includes the boom years. I could describe the Arizona housing market in phenomenal terms of what happened here. But the fact of the matter is they've been having a lot of shoddy homes and quality problems, and we can talk about that. But here's what they did. That expired at the end of that year. So any losses that happened in that year, they were able to write off against the last 5 years of income. They started dumping property like crazy. The interesting part is they created $900 million for themselves in this process, but they also get the right to buy that property back. They get first right to buy it back. So as all of our homeowners know, they're sitting on severely devalued properties, nowhere worse than in Arizona, Nevada, Texas, and Florida, the top markets that took the biggest hit. Certainly the Phoenix area and Arizona where I work is very heavily hit. Homes that we're selling for $400,000 to $450,000 homes are less than $200,000 now. People are still having to pay the same mortgages. And in Pulte's case in particular, they just haven't been responsible for defects. I'll invite you to a website later. But they dumped all this stuff out there. And then as they dump these properties, it doesn't matter where the property values go to. they make all this tax money, and then they'll get the right to buy them back cheaper than they did the first time.
So basically what they're doing is they're flooding the market so the price goes down. They're taking the loss off of their taxes. We're paying them to flood the market and crash the housing market. And the people at the bottom who are upside down on their mortgage, they're the folks who are being pushed out into the streets. It sounds like a perfect scheme.
It certainly makes things worse for everybody. And I don't think that's how people intended that to work.
Yeah, at least I would hope not.
No. Certainly not the average working Joe that's trying to make it and live the American dream of homeownership. That's for sure.
Well, you know, we talked to a lady last night who they're in the middle of being foreclosed upon. And they had an action out in Los Angeles where 22 of them were arrested for moving some furniture into a parking lot owned by J.P. Morgan Chase. And I'm saying, good on them. I wish we'd see much more of that kind of stuff. I think it's going to take folks going to the streets, people protesting, luncheons like this guy, making people aware of what's going on.
We've been chasing them for some time to try and hold them responsible for this and other actions. Their subcontractors that they hire have all kinds of problems. They claim they're not responsible for any of that, but then the marketing people explain to their customers that they control every process to make these wonderful homes. And, of course, the marketing is all very professional, all very slick, and they're certainly selling that emotion of hearth and home and everything else.
Right.
Unfortunately, too many people, when they move in, find a different experience. They also underwrite probably approaching 70% of the mortgages on the homes they sell because it's kind of like blue chip stamps. They offer them this great big discount, supposedly, to use their mortgage company. But I know that in some cases, others have found that the rates they could have got elsewhere were lower. But by that time, they were already locked in.
Yeah. Another example of you know, a big corporation taking advantage of somebody when, especially now, in one of the worst economic times in our lifetime.
Certainly the case.
Just shameless. And you know, one of the things that you know, I swung a hammer for a couple of years when I was younger. And to be honest, the industry back then was shoddy and had a bunch of problems because the unions had been pretty much, this was in Cleveland now, but the unions had been completely pushed out of the home building market altogether. In Arizona, do you have much union density in the residential home building industry?
Absolutely not. A lot of the workers have approached us about the terrible conditions that go on there. I work in particular on a campaign with Chaz Roberts Air Conditioning, which used to be the largest residential AC contractor in the United States. They employed the same sort of low-load contracting of late since the daughter and her boyfriend took over the company and hire unskilled workforce. Now, I want you to picture for a minute. I know not all of us have worked in construction. I've been in construction since the early 80s, and it's nice to hear that you've swung a hammer. But I want you to think about 115 degrees outside and what it's like to work in an attic.
But I thought it was a dry heat.
I'm
just pulling your leg here.
Right,
I thought
right.
I hear Arizona, and I say it's 120 degrees, but it's a dry heat.
It may be a dry heat, but it's still very, very hot. And it's almost like you can't drink enough water. They weren't providing any water for these workers. There was no safety training. We've had problems with just even unsafe ladders. There have been brain injuries. There's been, by law out here, they're supposed to provide water for these workers. You just cannot work in that environment. And at those heights, you're talking about two- and three-story homes, and they're swinging through the trusses.
Wow.
And
well, how much of a problem do you have out there with subcontracting? I mean, around here, from the way I understand it, most home builders are subcontractors. They don't work for the builder.
It's a race to the bottom.
It's another misclassification thing that I've always said has to be changed. But, you know, we just saw a FedEx case went the wrong way, in my opinion, when the district court there ruled that FedEx doesn't misclassify their workers, and they can be independent contractors, even though they have to wear the company uniform and drive vehicles identifying the company, but they're not employees.
What you see here is there used to be an hourly wage for the guys, but now they've switched everybody over on the piecework, which is even more grueling. And I know that the guys putting in air conditioning in this kind of environment are working in those kind of conditions. They're lucky to make $400 a month. There's been a number of huge wage and overtime lawsuits. I know with Chaz Roberts alone, that was almost $100,000. The painters and the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades are involved in this campaign, as are the laborers. And they've all had companies where there's been hundreds of thousands of dollars in unpaid overtime. The rules just get tossed to the side in this race to the bottom, and it's always the working guys that suffer.
Yeah, it's always the guy at the bottom who gets the shaft in all of this. Let's go back to what we were talking about originally, this Pulte thing. What do we do about this? What do my listeners do? How can we stop this kind of stuff from happening?
Well, there's a couple of things they can do. Of course, we have a petition on Twitter right now asking Pulte Homes to show them the money. They can post these articles on their Facebook pages. They can write Pulte Homes. I'd encourage them to check out a site called Poorly Built by Pulte. Info. They'll hear from their Pulte's own customers about what the conditions are like in the homes and how bad the experience has been for them. And then, and like you say, they've been turned around as well. So we'd like them to write the company. We're going to continue to publicize, and we thank folks like you that were able to help get the word out. Their bad actions and their bad acts that hurt not just the workers themselves, but all of us in ways that damage the economy and are not the way they intended our tax dollars to be used. I think whether a person is a conservative or a liberal, however they want, what label they want to use, I think people have to be concerned when there's that kind of money, of all of our money, being used for those kind of purposes and not being accounted for, in the way that it should.
Yeah, I agree. And I can't imagine how many other companies are out there. And the reason that we asked you to come on is it's rare you hear these kind of stories. And it's important that I think people hear it because in today's corporate-controlled for-profit media, they don't often expose this kind of stuff.
Well, we're going to continue to do this. I've personally and several other of my co-workers have been going in large numbers, like you saw in Troy, Michigan, at the Detroit Economic Council meeting, where you had hundreds of workers show up to call the CEO into accountability. We've also produced Lemon Awards and presented them to their chief financial officer, Mr. Clegg, to their marketing officer, Mr. Clegg, at the Green Builders Conference, at the Deutsche Bank Economic Summit. I mean, these people travel. Deborah Still is the head of their the Mortgage Banking Association. They've been in a number of problems over the same kind of mortgage practices that helped crash the rest of the economy. Since they underwrite so many of their loans, they've been forced into settlements with any number of states over their practices, including here in Arizona. It's just a litany of problems with Pulte, Del Webb, and Centex Homes.
It's good to hear that someone's out there keeping an eye on them and going after the people who did cause this mess. Even if we can't really hold them to account, at least pointing it out is a start.
I think the light of day is always a healthy thing.
I think that
as long as there's folks like yourselves and these working people and these unions that are willing to get the word out in the public, I think people make pretty good choices, but they have to hear about it first. And unfortunately, we have to work pretty hard to get that word out. So thank you for your efforts.
I appreciate your time. Edward Armour, sheet metal worker from Arizona. I appreciate your time. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Okay. smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I think about that. I think about the time I spent swinging a hammer building houses, and the conditions were, you know, they were heading downhill quickly then in the mid 80s. I can't imagine how bad they are now, especially when you look at how big these companies have gotten and how they've been allowed to consolidate. It's amazing stuff.
And my question is, if we got this $900 million, where's the enforcement mechanism?
Well, it's not a matter of this. You know, as I listen to the story, this is a operating losses. They were able to write off their losses, and we were paying them back. They were reducing the amount of profits they had, so they were paying less in taxes. So basically, they paid $900,000 less in taxes because they were protected through this bill for tanking the market. So as the market went down, they were dumping properties off that, you know, they said it was worth $300,000. They sold it for $200,000. They took a $100,000 loss. And, you know, whatever portion of that came back in profits, that's what they ended up with, if I understand this right. So the incentive for them, it was a perverse incentive to dump everything, take the loss, write it off of your previous profits. And then what happens is you end up tanking the entire housing market so that people who bought houses before bought a $300,000 house, and you just sold it for $200,000, now they're upside down.
But it violated the spirit. The spirit of the act was to create jobs and provide for unemployment for those who lost their jobs.
But like most of those acts, there are no enforcement teeth.
And that's my question.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So you're telling me there was no enforcement mechanism.
Well, at the end of it, you set things up hoping people will use it the right way.
Well, wouldn't the Attorney General have the purview to say, hey, look, you took this money under false pretenses. You could make the case it would border on fraud.
That would be a tough case to make, especially.
In other words, they took a loophole, or it wasn't defined adequately.
Why do you think the loophole was put there? I mean, understand that.
I mean, that's Wall a lot Street, of $900 million in one industry in a state the size of that's a lot of money.
Well, Wall Street writes stuff into their bills that help them. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about anything else. They care about profit. That's it. And if you know their gain is your loss, so be it. And that's what they're willing to do. And you know, this foreclosure thing, you know, like we talked about last night. For me, I think you got to do more actions. And I'd love to see some people in this area who are on the brink of foreclosure do the same thing. Because only when there's some squeak in the wheel does anybody do anything. You know, the unemployment issue. Why are we not seeing legions of unemployed marching on state capitals? When Tom Corbett said his really stupid thing, like there are jobs out there, they're just lazy people. Why weren't there thousands of unemployed folks camped out on the Capitol step with their resume in hand going, Tom, I got a resume. Where's the job you said was out there? Why weren't they there? Because we've basically treated unemployed folks like lepers. We've allowed them to, much like undocumented workers who are an undercurrent of the economy. They're an undercurrent of society. They're in the dark alleys. They're in the back rooms. And I'm saying at some point, folks, if you've been unemployed for 2 years, I'd be marching in the streets.
Well, again, the right-wing noise machine, the local talk shows, lockstep. They're on the air saying, yeah, I know this person, and I know that person, and I have a friend who knows this person, and they just don't want to take jobs that are available. And I looked in the paper yesterday, and there was a long list
of jobs that 90% of the people don't qualify for.
Right, or have already been filled, or part-time, or minimum wage. I mean, they make it such a cut and dry, and they do, again, they do a good job of messaging. When, in fact, an issue like that is more complex than just, well, they're not taking jobs that are available.
Well, here's the thing. Every Sunday I look in the newspaper, because I never know when I'm going to lose my job. And I, like a lot of people, I'm looking, let's see what's available. Let's see what's out there. And I got to be honest, every Sunday there may be one or two that I would be qualified to put a resume in for. And I've got a college degree. I can't imagine if you spent all of your life, working in a warehouse, you got a high school education, you spent 20 years doing warehouse work, where you're going to end up. But I think back to that email I got yesterday about the caller who called Limbaugh and said, the only jobs in warehousing that are out there are these temp jobs that don't pay benefits, that don't have health care, don't have pension, don't have any of that stuff, no sick days, no vacation, none of that stuff. Because you're a subcontractor. You're an independent contractor. There's a problem with that.
And then you pay him a fee for that.
Yeah, and what gets me, I was talking to somebody who they got a job at Amazon. I guess it pays like 10, 12 bucks an hour. You know how much Amazon probably pays that subcontractor? Probably $35-$40. Just so they don't have to deal with all the problems. And you know what they can do if anyone gets a bug and says, we should start joining the union? They just do away with them. Just do away with them. 1-888-520-RICK. We're right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Office and Professional Employees International Union is offering a unique benefits plan to members and non-members alike.
that it hopes the national labor movement will adopt. WIN's Doug Cunningham reports from Las Vegas.
OPEIU President Michael Goodwin says his union is offering access to health care, discounted prescriptions, towing services, and other benefits for just $52 a year. The plan is being rolled out here in Las Vegas in an effort to attract 2,000 taxi drivers to the OPEIU. These drivers are already represented by the union, but aren't members in this right-to-work state.
The goal of today is to, number one, say thank you as a loyalty benefit for the 3,000 we have, so we invited all of them. We've also invited the other 2,000 who have not joined yet, and hopefully they'll see the membership benefit program, and they'll mix with their brothers and sisters, and hopefully they will join. So the goal is, of course, is to get all 5,000 in the union.
Goodwin says OPEIU is also offering this benefits package to small businesses and workers that don't have unions. They would become associate members of OPEIU for as little as $1 a week. Goodwin says this OPEIU initiative could be a successful model for the 13 million member AFL-CIO to adopt nationwide.
I want to use that collective power of those 13 million to get these providers to collapse their rates so it's affordable, and then we can extend it and give those benefits to members.
A deal reached with the Obama White House and South Korea is headed for a vote in Congress next session. The agreement has split organized labor, with United Auto Workers and United Food and Commercial Workers coming out in support, and labor mothership, the AFL-CIO, coming out in opposition. However, a move being planned by Republicans may unify organized labor against the deal and scuttle support from Democrats who are dependent on labor votes. It has been rumored on the Hill that Republicans will demand that the Korean deal be brought up along with a similar trade deal with Colombia. Organized labor has been strongly against any deal with the South American country due to its poor record of supporting and protecting trade unionists. President Barack Obama himself, as a candidate running for the highest office in the land, condemned then-President George W. Bush's attempt to pass the trade deal with Colombia. According to the State Department, nearly 2,800 trade unionists have been murdered in the country during the last 25 years. While debating the Obama tax deal on the floor of the House Thursday, California Republican Representative David Dreyer may have shown the Republicans' trade deal hand.
With what would be the largest bilateral free trade agreement in the history of the world, that being the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement, I think it's imperative for us to do this in Colombia and Panama as well, so that we can create union and non-union jobs, good manufacturing jobs right here.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed her permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. CNN Money reported the number of foreclosure notices filed in November plunged 21%, the biggest drop month over month ever recorded by Realty Track, the online foreclosure marketeer. The filings fell 14% with November 2009. The number of Americans who actually lost their home due to bank repossession plummeted even more steeply to 67,428, which was off a whopping 28% in October. So, you know, you look at this and you go, wow, that's great news, right? Not so great. This has to do more with the fact that people got upset at the robo-signers, and they've pretty much put a halt on things until they can figure out how to straighten this out. I predict that January, February, when we start seeing some movement in Congress, you'll see things go back up. But until now, some folks have a little bit of a reprieve, if you will. And that whole robo-signing thing just stinks to me to high heaven. I think every person involved should be locked up. Since we love locking people up, there'd be a good place to start.
Okay, and who's in charge of that?
Who's in charge of what?
Who would have to prosecute?
Well, the attorneys generals in each state.
In each particular state.
Or attorney general holder, since it goes over numerous states. At some point, you got to hold these people accountable.
It would be a start, but do you really think that'll happen?
No, it's never going to happen, but it should. Every person should be locked up. And in many cases,
you
read the stories of the people who were former hairdressers and Walmart clerks who said, yeah, I knew what I was doing wrong, but the boss told me to do it. Yeah, that would be like, you know, hey, me as a truck driver saying, well, you know, I knew there were no brakes. I knew there were no brakes on the truck, but the boss told me to take it anyway. And then somebody gets killed. I'm responsible for that. There's got to be some level of reality. I got an email during the break. And if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, I do answer all of them. And some of them I even read on the air. Helen writes, most of the banks like Chase, J.P. Morgan, Mellon, Bank of America, et cetera, were in violation of trading with the enemy acts back in World War II. They survived supporting the Nazis just as Cheney and Halliburton have survived supporting Iran and other axis of evil nations. She writes, Comcast workers are hired as independent contractors, which is why the workers have incredibly long hours and must pay for their vehicles like cabbies. Interesting stuff. Good news out of Washington today. Michelle Bachmann, my girlfriend, she is now, I can't make this up, she has now been appointed to the House Intelligence Committee. The Intelligence Committee.
Isn't that an oxymoron when you're talking about her?
Yes. And, you know, the thing is, what's funny is, you know, didn't she start that Tea Party caucus? And, you know, I think, like, one person showed up. So if you have a Tea Party and nobody shows up, is it really a party?
You know, they talked about that today on one of the TV networks I was watching. He said it used to be that they just fought over the positions on the Appropriations Committee. Now, because of this flap about too much fat in the budget and too many of these congressmen getting money for special projects, are kind of running away from those positions because the people who take them tend to lose. It's kind of ironic, but that is funny about Michelle Bachmann. I mean, the political pundits on MSNBC, they couldn't stop laughing.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I think happened, and I'm going to give John Boehner a bit of credit here. I mean Boehner. I'm going to give the Tan Man, you know, Mr. Cry Me a River. I'm going to give him some credit here. The House Intelligence Committee is not a place where you're going to get into a lot of trouble. You're not going to get, it's a very secretive group. You're not going to get a lot of media headlines. It's not something where you're out there telling everything that's going on. So they've basically muzzled her, which is, you know, like the mafia used to do. They would cut out your tongue. Boehner has put her in the intelligence
committee. Where she can do the least damage.
Where she can do the least damage.
You know, as funny as that is, there might be a lot of truth in that.
I'm telling you, that's what it was. Because, you know, that's what you do with crazy people. You make them think that you're giving them something. Oh, boy, I gave you something. And it's really to hold them in check. And that's what they're doing with her. And look, you know, hey, you know, now they've got someone to look at in the Intelligence Committee. They're like the ones that they put in the basement. You know, they're just sitting there going, nobody ever talks to us. The guys with the pocket protectors, well, if you will.
It's like the one commentator said on MSNBC, you know, the constituents of hers, they get what they deserve.
Yep.
A lot of truth in that statement.
There's also good news from an ABC Washington Post poll. Evidently, 6 in 10 Americans say they would never, not even clinically, vote for the former governor of Alaska, the quitter chief herself, Sarah Palin. And, you know, here's what's interesting is she's one of the most popular Republicans, yet 6 in 10 people said they would never. So, you know, I don't know how well that's going to work out for her. But I'm saying, proud supporter, Palin Santorum, 2012. That's what I want to see. I want to see them right up there. Although I do think it's going to be, Mitt Romney.
Well, I think he's the most vulnerable, but yet the polls, well, that shows you how much they mean. Of all the prospective Republican candidates, just the best. It's kind of ridiculous a little bit when you think about it, to have a presidential poll 2 years away.
They're talking about having debates already, Jake.
No.
They're already talking about having presidential debates.
It will come soon enough.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me, and making my prediction, now this is an early, early prediction, but I'm thinking Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum. That's what I'm thinking the ticket is. Either that or Romney's going to have to pick a moderate minority. I don't know who yet. Haven't figured that out. Maybe Bobby Jingle Jangle Jindal. But I'm still looking for that. I don't think Pawlenty has a chance. I don't think Huckabee. I think Huckabee scares people.
Well, Santorum is far enough to the right, but I don't know. My question is, he was out of politics for 4 years. Is that going to be a negative or positive? Maybe a positive. Maybe a quasi new face on the scene.
Again, you know, it comes back to, you know, he's doing his exploratory committee. Mm-hmm. He's going to throw some money out there exploring becoming president. He's not going to win. We all know that. He doesn't have a snowball's chance. What he's doing is he's positioning himself for maybe the vice presidential tap or at least the cabinet position.
Well,
and what I'm saying, this is a job interview. He's working to get a job. As much as he hates government, he's dying to get a government job. And I love these folks who they hate government, but they're always looking for that next job. Remember when we met Daryl Issa in the elevator?
You asked him
about Tom Daschle. And he goes, well, he needs a job.
Yeah, I was upset with what Daschle did.
But, you know, it's that mentality. And, you know, as much as Issa is going to go.
It was like home. Home.
Yeah, he needs a job. Everybody needs a job.
No, they discussed him today. Your buddy, Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich said, this man is very formidable, and he's
dangerous.
He means what he says.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, I believe the Democrats nominated the black congressman of the committee that ICE is going to be on.
Conyers?
No, it's not Conyers, from the South. Anyway, you know, he said, I supported the man, the Democrat he's talking about. He said, he was a former prosecutor, I believe, a defense lawyer. And he thought he was very well qualified. He said, we're going to need strong leadership because this is for real. This is for real.
And?
That was his point.
Oh, okay.
Congressman Isley, he's for real. When he says something, when he's talking about what he wants to do, he has every intention of following through. And we've been talking about him for months.
Yeah, well, he's going to be the pit bull. And speaking of Kucinich, a guy I would have liked to have seen be president.
Yet when he runs, unfortunately,
they've painted him as a crazy.
They've painted him
as a crazy little Perot character. He's a caricature.
Well, he looks a little bit like Perot.
Yeah.
But I like him.
The crazy little vegan.
Hey, I like him.
Yeah, I mean, because he's right. He's right on trade policies. Mm-hmm. He's right how we get things started again. And what's interesting is him and Ron Paul seem to be buddies.
Well,
both of them look like Ross Perot characters.
Kucinich would be, big business's worst nightmare.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I look at Da Silva from Brazil, and they really thought he was going to be business's worst nightmare, and he turned out to be their best friend.
Well,
wow. You know, and
that's a matter of interpretation.
Well, you don't have to be the enemy to make things work.
If you're talking business as usual, he would be their worst nightmare. Now, if you're saying he's certainly not going to prevent them from making money, nor should he, but I'm sure he's going to go after the excesses, and I'm sure he's going to go after some things that they've been doing that have been hurting the country and hurting working people, hurting their investors and hurting workers. I do believe he would be an absolute bull on that.
Yeah, well, we're never going to find out, so that's a moot point. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What's on your mind? We're right back after.
You could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Question. What do biotech corporations, national milk processors, and the Ohio state government have in common? Answer. Defeat! Such biotech powerhouses as Monsanto and Eli Lilly are the profiteers behind an artificial growth hormone that induces dairy cows to produce more milk. This stuff is not good for the cows, and it produces nutritionally inferior milk. It also horrifies consumers, who tend to get a bit testy at the thought of having what actually is a sex hormone added to the milk their children drink. However, big milk marketers like the idea of squeezing out more milk per cow, for it fattens their bottom lines. The only problem is that little matter of consumer rejection. But the biotechers and marketers fixed that by getting federal regulators to declare that adulterated milk need not be labeled as such. In short, the industry, the government, and even the cows know about the sex hormones, but consumers are kept in the dark. Nonetheless, many organic and smaller dairy businesses have had the audacity to label their products as hormone-free, and consumers have rushed to them. This spurred the hormone hucksters into a cross-country lobbying frenzy, demanding that various state governments ban hormone-free labels. Ohio swallowed this corporate line, outlawing labels that tell consumers what's not in their milk. Now, however, in a case brought by the Organic Trade Association, the U.S. Court of Appeals has ruled that such bans are not only ridiculous but unconstitutional, violating the free speech rights of dairy producers who want to be straight with consumers. This is Jim Hightower saying this court decision is a major defeat for the 15-year effort by the corporate powers to hide their perfidy from milk buyers. To learn more, contact the Organic Trade Association at OTA.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open border right outside my There's minutemen in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a barrier like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends the illegals home, who's gonna build the wall? Who's gonna build your wall?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. I don't know how many people know the website PolitiFact. They're part of the St. Petersburg Times group. They're considered an independent fact-checking website. They're one of the people who will tell you if what politicians are saying is true, partially true, neutral, false or liar, liar, pants on fire. They had an article today in the spring of 2009. A Republican strategist settled on a brilliant and powerful attack line for President Barack Obama's ambitious plan to overhaul America's health insurance system. His name, Frank Luntz, a consultant famous for his phraseology, urged Republicans to label Obama's health care plan as a government takeover. He wrote, government takeovers are like coups. Both lead to dictators and the loss of freedom. And, of course, as we know, that stuck. You heard Republicans repeating that ad nauseum. Fox News was on board. All of the right-wing media was just inundated with, it's a government takeover. Socialism! Socialism! And it was all this one guy, Luntz. He thought this stuff up. Well, they have labeled that. They have labeled government takeover of healthcare as their 2010 lie of the year. Because we know it wasn't true. But it stuck, and they used it again and again and again and again until people finally believed it. The second place, the runner-up to lie of the year, take a guess, second place. My girlfriend. President Obama went to India and spent $200 million a day.
I saw that in TV. I saw that.
And you know what?
And you know where that came from?
Out of her keister?
Look, pretty close. A newspaper in India, never heard of, and nobody checked it. Nobody bothered to check it, but it fulfilled the Republican agenda. So, you know, the Republican noise machine just repeated it ad nauseum. And all of a sudden, can you believe the president would spend our money like that? Too bad it was a total lie.
Well, when does the truth ever matter? You know, amazing stuff.
I mean, really, if people would have just stopped, when I heard those numbers, I thought, now how could that possibly be true? Unfortunately, in this country, people don't always stop and think about the logic of it.
Oh, why would Michelle lie to me? Yesterday in Pensacola, Florida, attorneys for 20 states fighting the new health care law told a judge it will expand the government's powers in dangerous and unintended ways. Not to mention its government takeover of health care. The states want U.S. District Judge Roger Vinson to issue a summary judgment throwing out the health care law without a full trial, which, again, you know, that's preferable to the right. And I say go ahead and do it. I think it's might as well. But they argue it violates people's right by forcing them to buy health insurance or face penalties by 2014. David Rifkin, he said the act would lead more constitutional damage, and in the wake of all other statutes in our history, this would be the worst. And look, the judge is leaning towards it. He signaled, when I was a young man, I didn't have money, and I had to pay for the birth of my child out of my pocket. Yeah, that's back when it was like $500. My grandmother tells me the story. They didn't have health insurance either. When their kids were born, it was a couple of bucks. When my son was born, understand, my son came out in 11 minutes. We were in the hospital 11 minutes. So for 11 minutes worth of work, and this is work that I wish I could get, it cost well over $7,000. $7,000. My son basically fell out. And it cost my insurance company $7,000. Tell me there's something not wrong with that picture. Now look, the doctor was great, the nurses were great, the hospital was wonderful, everything was terrific. But, you know, we could have done that at the Ritz-Carlton with a private doctor and private nurses for $7,000, I think. But, you know, but you got guys like this. Oh, I paid for it out of my own pocket when I didn't have insurance. And that was back in a time when you could.
Or you could give the doctor a chicken.
Or a chicken, yes.
a live one at that.
Good point. Good point. Because, hey, you know, that chicken could reproduce. Well, and you wouldn't have to take it to the vet.
And he might give you eggs at the same time. So you can have a chicken and eggs.
So we're going to go down that path, aren't we?
Well, years ago, we actually did.
If you give a doctor a chicken, then you're going to have to give him a frying pan to cook the eggs. Is that kind of on the, if you give a mouse a cookie?
You know, it depends what you negotiate.
All right, gotcha. Right there with you. They're saying, look, and this is where I'm at, kind of, at the end of this. Let's get this decision out of the way and get this on to the Supreme, or to the next level, to the federal courts, and let them decide. I'm amazed, and have been for some time, that conservatives are against this. I'm just amazed at it. When, in fact, they were for it. Oh, I guess, wait a second. They were for it before they were against it. Oh, yeah, that sounds familiar.
Flip-flop, flip-flop, flip-flop.
And that whole thing, if you go back to that, it's government takeover. It was really very effective because almost immediately Democrats jumped off of the single payer. They jumped off of the public option, and they abandoned all decent legislative aims and then ended up with this, well, we're going to have exchanges. And look, there's some very good things in the bill, and I'm not going to badmouth all of it. But, you know, I thought, again, the Democrats just didn't lead. They had rabbit ears, just like I said before.
Well, I think we said it earlier in the show. How many of the Democrats campaigned that they actually supported and vigorously campaigned? Some of them who voted for it shied away from that fact.
I don't know. It's frustrating times. Frustrating times. Because what we need in this country, we've got well over 50 million people uninsured. And what that means is that the people like me who have health insurance and people like you who have insurance and folks that have it, you're going to end up paying a lot more for it. And for the people who want to get it, it's going to be that much more expensive and the bar is going to be that much higher.
Well, and to show you how bad things are, Rick, I mean, you and I both know this was, probably the option D. If you would have given us five different options, this would have been maybe D or even E, but yet we got something that really basic, and it's going to help a lot of people. Now, if we would have gotten a public option, or we would have even better, got something very close to Medicare for All, we could have helped a lot more people. But my point is, there's so many people that need help with health care. Even this very, very slight change is going to help millions and millions of Americans. And at the end of the day, amazingly, As weak as we think it is, you can build on it, and that's the one hope.
Well, I've been reading a couple editorials, and what they're saying is, what do you think is going to happen in 20 or 30 years? Give it a generation, see what happens with it. Nothing's going to change overnight. Give it a generation. We didn't get into this mess overnight. We're not going to get out of it. I've been saying that the number one thing that you have to do is get us away from the for-profit status. I'm not taking all the profit out of it, but take the perverse incentives out of it. Take the idea that this reactive system that we have, where someone with cancer is a $250,000 windfall. Say, you know what? We're going to prevent that. We don't do enough preventative care. And you hear Republicans say, well, people go to the doctor. Well, that's the point. I want people going to the doctor more often. I want people getting checkups on a yearly basis. And when they go, I got a lump here. Let me go get that checked out. And they realize, oh, well, let me take care of that right now because that could be breast cancer. We don't do enough of that. And I'm in favor of spending a little bit more on the front end. It's the reason I change my oil every 3,000 miles. Mm-hmm. It's the reason I put new antifreeze in the car. Because you want to prevent the problems from happening.
Well, you hit on probably one of the two most important factors that we need. First of all, we need competition, true competition, which we don't have, which a public option would have given us. But the second is we need to change from what you just talked about. We need to change to a system that's preventive, and we don't have. We have a reactive system, which makes it much more expensive. And at the end of the day, it's like making a deposit and accruing interest on that. At the end of the day, it'll save you money if you go regularly to the doctor.
I agree. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. I guess my question is, you go into the big inaugural ball, CorbettCauleyInaugural.com is the website. If you couple a little shackle in your pocket, about a $150 ticket, you can go to the inaugural ball. It's going to be at the Farm Show Complex and Expo Center. $150 on January 18th. It will be held at 7:30 p.m.
And I guess my question is, what big band are they? No, Bon Jovi's at Rendell's. Do you know any of the big bands? I just might.
I might sneak
in the back door, Rick.
I'm not going there.
Yeah. You're not going?
You're trolling me.
Yeah. I'm kidding, but, you know, just for interest, who are they bringing in? You know, let me guess. Not the Rolling Stones. I know that's out.
I have no concern whatsoever.
Okay.
But I, you know, look, as a matter of a public service, if people want to go and spend $150 or, you know, half of a week's unemployment, there's a good way to do it.
Maybe the other question is, I wonder what kind of food they're going to have.
I don't know. And don't, you're trolling me again. but, you know, here's the thing. You know, we talked a couple of days ago about Corbett's card deal, and I found out that the reimbursement rate's 35 cents a mile for getting back and forth from your district to the capital, and 50 cents a mile for all work that you do. So, like, if you come from Harrisburg, you go to a town hall meeting in your district, that's 50 cents a mile. And one of the things that, you know, Corbett ran on this idea that we need to reduce the number of state vehicles without doing any costing out studies, because you're still going to have to move people around. unless we're talking about having a big bus to drive people around. I don't know how you're going to do it any cheaper, unless we're talking about getting rid of police cars and putting cops on bikes, unless we're talking about getting rid of, you know, state vehicles that plow the roads and you know, do the road work, because that's what the vast majority of the vehicles are. Now, look, you know, is there some problems there? Sure. Can we do things a little bit better? Sure. But this idea that we're gonna do away with all the legislators' cars and make them use their own vehicle, and then we're going to pay them mileage. Have we done any studies on this? And this was my first question. Have we done any looking into what the actual costs will be? Because, again, for me, whenever you start privatizing things, whenever you start doing this kind of stuff without thinking about it, it always ends up costing us, we the taxpayer, a lot more money. But it looks good. This is, again, going back to what I've been saying the last couple of months. Republicans are good at politics. They're good at messaging. They're good at influencing voters. They're terrible at governing. This is another one of those examples, because the way I'm looking at this, if you're a legislator in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or anywhere 100 miles away from here, at 50 cents a mile, down and back, that's $100. You do that 4 or 5 times a month, how much is that starting to ring up to being? It's a lot of money. And I don't think people realize how many miles folks put on these vehicles. And when you start talking about the mileage rates, and this is, I'm telling you, this is going to turn around and bite we the taxpayers in the butt just so he can look good. Just so I did my campaign pledge.
Especially if you're talking about state Senate, some of those districts cover 5-6 counties. And you're talking about some of the northern ones. They are big, big counties.
Yeah, you start going to meeting here, meeting there, and they do a lot of that. Look, trust me, folks. I am not on the side of the legislators. They've got enough perks. They've got it made financially. They've got great jobs. They've got great benefits. They're doing all right. What I'm worried about is this costing me more in the long run, just so Governor-elect Corbett can look good. That he says, well, you know, I did what I said I was going to do. And the reality is, most of the state vehicles, you know, our state patrol cars, our road crew cars, our inspectors, you know, you're talking about a very small amount in the legislature. But, you know, it's that politicking, Jake. It's that politicking.
Well, it also gives them an excuse, perhaps, to eliminate some state jobs. Well, and again, even if it's not cost effective.
That's it. You get rid of some of those mechanics who work on the cars and do the preventative maintenance. Get rid of some of those folks, and then you take a car for an oil change. How much is it going to cost? Take it for a tune-up. How much is that going to cost? Again, all this stuff that nobody's talking about.
They don't question. You know, that brings up to mind something. I don't believe I mentioned this yesterday. Matt Breit was on the air,
and he is the head of the local Tinky Tank.
He's the Tinky Tank Commonwealth Foundation. You know that foundation that he'd like you to believe just the average citizens pour money into me because they believe in my cause, when we know that most of their money or a lot of their money comes from corporate people. Anyway, he was being interviewed by the local talk show host in my county. And he started talking about crime related to alcohol drinking, and how in none of the states, according to him, in none of the states, when they went from a state-controlled system like we have here to a privatized system, in none of the states where they did it, did crime go up. Well, that runs contrary to everything I've heard about the state of New Jersey, where, in fact, I've been told by reliable sources that, in fact, crime involving alcohol, and more specifically, crime involving alcohol committed by juveniles, went up. And I think that's one of the issues that, you know, those who are fighting for those jobs need to get out there and say, hey, look, this isn't just about money. This is about quality of life. This is about crime. And here's another one. When you gave me those numbers, Rick, I don't know if you did a quick arithmetic on those numbers. For the state to bring in $2 billion, I'm afraid they're going to have to throw out a lot of licenses right now that they don't have. My point is this. as happened in New Jersey, where they wound up with too many licenses in one area, and you had an overflow, and some of them were in areas that they weren't economically well off, and that enhanced some of the problems within the community. It becomes a quality of life issue, and that's another thing that I think those who are trying to protect those jobs need to get out there. I mean, they did before, and Catholic Church was one of the people who went out there and fought with them, and drunk mothers with drunk driving, all that. They need to come back and say, hey, this is not just about money. This is about crime, and this is about quality of life.
Well, here's the argument. I'll give you their argument. I guess I won't.
Why? You hate America!
Kind of late, but better late than never. I mean, look, we're going to fight this battle, and I think it's going to be one of the very first, and it's going to be the big one. And depending on how things go, it could be a long line of other ones that follow.
At the end of the day, it's all about greed. It's all about some powerful, wealthy interests that want to get their greedy little hands on that profit. And that profit, and here's what the other side, here's what guys like Matt Brea don't tell. They say, well, what does it matter if they privatize? You know, those fees that we now get, we'll have them. Yeah, but what about the profit, Matt? Who's going to get the profit? I'll tell you who's going to get it. A lot of them are going to go into the corporate coffers, or you're going to get another dividend, or they're going to get a nice bonus to their CEOs.
This is a lose-lose for we the taxpayers on every front. On the front that, you know, economically, we're going to give away a big asset that brings $400 million a year in sales tax, $100 million a year in profit into the state coffers. That $100 million we're going to have to pay right away. The $400 million in state tax, you're going to have to hire people to go out and enforce. Because right now, the state stores, the wine and spirit shops, the liquor stores, whatever you call them, they pay on every single bottle that they sell without being checked on. It's there every month, every year, where it's supposed to be. If we privatize this stuff, if we hand this over to corporate America, there's going to be a window of cheating. There are going to be people who are going to try and evade paying that tax, which means we're going to have to hire people to go and follow this stuff down. We're going to have to hire more liquor control board people to go out and like they used to do in Cleveland, send people in to try and buy with underage kids. We're going to be seeing a lot more of that stuff. And that's going to cost us more money. We're going to have to continue to raise our costs. Why, the system right now is fine the way it is. But again, you know, it comes back down to the big box stores, the big supermarkets, the big drug stores, the big convenience store chains. They all want that next product. Another product on the shelf that's going to bring in revenue, and it's something, and the newspapers want it, and the radio stations want it, and all of the TV people, they want it. Why? Because it means ad revenue. But what about society? Is the consumption of alcohol something that we want to encourage? Do we want that to be an impulse item like it was when I grew up in Cleveland? Where you could drive through one of the drive-through beer stores and buy one cold can of beer, get yourself a 40-ounce bottle to drive right out the other side? Is that the kind of society we want? When I go into a 7-Eleven or not just any of those type stores, you see a bottle of 42-proof vodka sitting there right next to the Tic Tacs. Is that the kind of society we want? I say no, because I remember what I did as a kid. And, yes, call me hypocrite. Actually, I call myself hypocrite here. I don't want my kids doing what I did. I want them to be a little smarter than I was. And that's the weird thing about being a parent. You tend to look back and go, please be a little bit smarter than I was. Don't be as dumb as me. Anyway.
Well, if you look at the people who want to buy these licenses, right, and you look at the way they operate their business now, you know, a lot of them, they employ part-time.
Yeah.
A lot of them minimum wage. Now, do you really think those people are going to give you the protections that these state workers? These state workers absolutely will not sell you a bottle of whiskey. They will not unless you're of age, because they know they're going to lose your job. Do you really believe you're going to have that protections? And there's another issue we haven't even discussed. those 4,000 people who work for the state stores, I mean, they're not getting rich, but off the top of my head, I'd say, well, $14 to $20 an hour. Decent wages. And they're paying taxes. That's my point. Yep. They're paying taxes.
And all those will be lost. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Also, hungryandhomeless.org if you want to make a tax-deductible donation to Project Share. We're right back to wrap things up after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
You're ready to work. Do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
As the workers who serve you in Pennsylvania's wine and spirit stores, we send warmest holiday greetings to all of our customers.
We make sure that you get the best products and service, and we make sure that underage drinkers don't buy alcohol in our stores. We're proud of our record. It can't be beat anywhere.
And we don't have troublesome liquor stores downgrading every corner in our communities.
We look forward to serving you this holiday period and in the years to come, and continuing to generate more than $500 million a year for the Pennsylvania Treasury. That keeps our state taxes down.
That's right. More than $500 million a year. That benefits all of us as taxpayers, and it's growing every year.
So, from all of us in the wine and spirit shops,
please enjoy our products responsibly and have a safe and joyous holiday.
Brought to you by the members of the United Food and Commercial Workers throughout the state who serve all Pennsylvania.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Again, tomorrow, just in a couple hours, we're going to be 12 hours and 13 minutes. We're going to be out at the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street right there in Carlisle, doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holiday gig. We'll hope you come out and see us. There's a big trailer ABF gave us to use for the week to put food in. You can't miss it out there. So stop by, you know, can of corn, something, some non-perishable goods. You want to drop a couple of bucks into the pot, that would be great as well. All donations are tax deductible. If you need a seat, we can surely come up with something for you from Project Share to make sure that you get that for April 15th. Also, if you want to donate some cash, because honestly, hopefully money is the best thing to give them at this time of year, because they can turn a dollar into so much more than you can just buying it from a retail store. Now, look, you know, Giant lets us come there and encourages us to do this because hopefully you're going to buy more stuff from them. But a couple of bucks in the pot, that's the way they go. And plus, you know, it's tax deductible. So if you go to hungryandhomeless.org, you can donate right there also. We're going to be doing this whole thing, and I'm hoping it works. We're going to be streaming live from the location so you can sit in the comfort of your own home and watch us freeze, because it is supposed to be cold, cold, cold. Supposed to be 32 tomorrow.
But I'm looking forward to those hot, enriching breakfasts. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, I'll make sure you get a bagel or something.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe a... No, actually, no, none of that stuff.
Can I put my order in now? Like ham and eggs?
Yeah. If you meaning ham and eggs looking like a bagel, yeah. You can have anything you want.
Oh, is that a new product? A ham and egg?
Imagine it to be anything you want to
do. A ham and egg bagel, huh?
Yeah, think of it as a big, juicy steak.
Okay.
That's a lot like a bagel.
I guess McDonald's, here I come.
Well, that's your choice. That's not on the gourmet menu. Anyway, down in Florida, Much like many states, the economic picture not so good. There are 1.1 million people in Florida unemployed as of last month, and 55 of Florida's 67 counties have reported double-digit unemployment. That puts them at fifth highest in foreclosures and a lot of other things. They face a $3 billion budget shortfall, kind of like here in Pennsylvania, including $1.5 billion shortfall for pressing needs like schools and courts. So their new governor, the guy who's going to be the new governor, former health care executive and multimillionaire Rick Scott, he's holding his grand inaugural ball, just like our guy here. Only he's gonna only charge $95 because corporations have kicked in to the tune of about $2 million so far.
I might have a plane reservation to go down there.
There you go. About $2 million so far, so he can have this grand inaugural ball, because, of course, it's all about him. And, you know, the question is, $2 million could go a long way. And this is what I've been saying about Corbett. This inaugural ball should be a potluck dinner this time. Look, you bring something.
Hey, if you're right.
Make a donation to the state. Make it go to the food bank. Make it go to the homeless shelters. Make it go to the unemployment rainy day fund, whatever. But none of this fancy stuff. Man, it should be a potluck deal. Let these millionaires bring a bowl of chili or a bowl of fruit salad or something, or some of that nasty macaroni salad. But then you donate that cash that you brought, and you help people in shelters and in soup kitchens. Help some of the people who are living on the streets. I mean, really, we are in a major economic crisis in this country. And you got people like Rick Scott holding these grand galas. Here in Pennsylvania, you got this guy holding this big thing. And now it may not be the grand sparkling gala that this is, but still, this is tough times.
And isn't it ironic that about three blocks from Farm Show Arena, you have a big homeless shelter? Just packed full people.
Here's the thing. I'm sure that when they're done having their gala event, they will take some of the board of fare and let it trickle down to those people in the homeless shelter.
Just like Marie Antoinette. Yeah. I'm sure.
And speaking of Rick Scott, much like Kasich in Ohio and Walker in Wisconsin, he's balking at the idea of a high-speed rail in Florida. Now, they're saying, from Orlando to Tampa, this high-speed rail line that they've got planned would create 24,000 jobs. And he doesn't want it. Because, we would have to run it. And we'd have to have 24,000 new jobs. That would be bad. I'm telling you, these people scare me. Absolutely scare me.
It's hard to believe, Rick, that strictly because of political ideology. I mean, that is a win-win-win. You have a bunch of jobs, obviously a larger number of jobs. When they're building it, you're going to have jobs in there permanent. That's a boon to the local economies. You're going to pay taxes. That is a win-win-win-win, you would think.
The $2.6 billion high-speed project going to be paid for mostly by Washington. All but $280 million of it, which is what he's balking at. So, he's holding, and again, it's this idea of holding hostage. There are 24,000 jobs at stake here. When you're talking about a state that has 1.1 million people unemployed, I would think 24,000 jobs would be welcome. If it's only going to cost you $280 million to invest in a high-speed rail system from Orlando to Tampa, I would jump all over that. Can we have that money? Can we have the $2.6 billion that Florida doesn't want to put that high-speed rail here in Pennsylvania and create those 24,000 jobs here? Can we have it here?
Well, I would bet that 24,000 is probably conservative because you have to factor in jobs that could be relocated or located, started up from scratch in that area because of the infrastructure improvements?
Well, they're just talking about the rail itself. There are 23,000 people. They estimate it's going to take to build it and 1,000 people to operate.
I understand that. But,
again, you're correct, because what you're going to have is around every stop, you're going to have high-density communities building up around it. And you're going to have a building industry. And again, this is that spiraling up of the economy. You build your rail line through, and then at every stop you see expansion. You see people building these high-density communities and shops and all kind of things. And that's good for an economy.
And amazingly, we are so far behind the rest of the industrialized world, where at one time we were the preeminent power. Now, I understand it's going back quite a few days, decades. But when you compare us with Europe, I mean, we are decades behind that when it comes to high-speed and rail traffic.
Well, because we did all the things. Service. We did all the things in Europe that they wouldn't let us do here, like national health care and some of the good stuff, and having strong labor unions and infrastructure, public transportation. They wouldn't let us do it here. So Truman, you know, to his credit, he did a lot of it there. Last thing I want to get to tonight, in September, the Chamber of Commerce sent a letter officially opposing the 9/11 First Responders Bill. You know it as the James Zedroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act of 2010. Here's what the Chamber wrote in its September press release. The Chamber strongly opposes attacks on foreign-owned companies doing business in the United States. The provisions included in H.R. 847 would raise taxes on foreign corporations that invest and create jobs domestically. We would discourage foreign investment in the United States, override long-standing tax treaties, damage U.S. relationships with major trading partners, and could prompt retaliation by foreign governments against U.S. operations abroad. Furthermore, the provision would further aggravate already unsettled financial markets. So basically what they're saying is that they're against having foreign corporations pay their fair share here, because what's going on is they're expatriating those profits. Part of this bill, and to pay for the benefits for the folks, was to tax those at a reasonable rate. And my question in this is, who's paying the Chamber of Commerce to do this? What foreign company is paying them to do this? Recently, CEO Tom Donahue, the big chamber guy, explained to the Washington Monthly that the entire purpose of the Chamber of Commerce is to provide deniability to corporations that want to affect the outcomes of elections or of public policy. You think about the health care bill in 2009, the International Chamber spent $86 million from the health insurance industry to fight health care reform. You want to talk deniability? Right there. Citizens United, the International Chamber, used millions to fund attacks. And this is the kind of stuff that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce does. They oppose taking care of the people that we call heroes. We live in very, very, very twisted times with very twisted people. And right and wrong doesn't matter anymore. It's all about green. And I've said that for years. It's not about black or white. It's about green. It's not about right or wrong. It's about greed. And these people, they've got a lot of it. And they feel that they control the system right now. It's just wrong. Anyway, tomorrow, in 12 hours, we will be in the parking lot. We hope you'll come out. Until then, we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide that flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
They're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder, what's a guy on Main Street to do? I've always tried to be an honest, upstanding kind of guy. But I must admit lately, I thought about giving something else.